Welcome to the Soxcast. We got fun and games. Welcome to episode 176. We are here to impregnate your pretty little ears with just the hottest load of media critique you've ever felt in your life. So prepare to get filled to the brim.
Keep going, own it.
It may even overflow a bit. Some of my sources tell me that that's the part that's really hot. So stick around if you want to get sticky with your socks, pals. How's everybody doing?
Use the socks to mop it up afterwards.
There you go. What do you think? Off to a rollicking start, huh?
People make socks crusty.
Yeah, really? For sure. For sure. There's a lot of people in this community and not a lot of socks to go around.
I can't wait. We're still coming up with new socks jokes.
Still coming up with new socks jokes. Hey. Ooh, so we're here. It's finally fall. I want to first start out by sending a big congratulations and a big plug to our good friend Chris.
Fuck yes.
Who just launched a very cool new video game that I am very excited to get to play this week called XYZE. It's called XYZE. You can play that for free on itch.io, but you should also go ahead and slip them that 10 for the really cool extra bonus stuff that comes with it. Yeah, like this game is dope. I know that Toad played through it two times in one session yesterday. So, I mean, of course.
Yes.
Of course. So, yeah, XYZE, it's a bump combat game. So, if you are missing out on some of that old school East action and just bumping into things and watching them bounce back and around, I tested like the first two areas of it back in March, I think, and I had a really good time, and I know that it's only gotten better since. So
fucking jazzed. Yeah. So excited.
Yeah, that
a real all-star cast in that playtesters list here.
Yeah.
Melis Hantani worked on playtested it. A bunch of Sox friends, Reika.
Mm-hmm. You want a bunch of people that are going to break your video game. It sounds like that's the kind of people that'll do it and get you in good shape for a release. Yeah. So, yeah, big congrats to Chris and Alex for that big release. Like I said, I think we're all here pretty excited to play it. Being big East fans that we are.
And Battle Network fans. There's some Mega Man Battle Network DNA to it, too.
Yeah. You look at the backgrounds. They're like those cute animated backgrounds that kind of just scroll around. Like, that's a cool
And there's
one.
An arcade mode.
Yeah.
There's you an and me, we're gonna, you're going to fucking delete this game. We're going to fucking show everybody up. And then Toad's going to make us look like nothing.
Toad will, like, we will get very good, and then Toad will come by. Yeah, I did it in like 45 minutes. Yeah, that tracks. It looks like a good speedrun game. Like the
it
way,
does look like a speed run
just
game.
from having what I've played of it, especially with that dash, and it's just whoo, feels real good. Feels real good, y'all. So go play XYZE. That's XYZE. It's on itch.io for free. So yeah,
we'll link it in the description.
We will link it in the description for sure.
And I'll make a note to make sure Polly links it in the description.
And John will make. Yeah, there you go. I'm in my old age. I need all the reminders that I can get. So, yeah. I recently crossed that threshold of you're old. So, yeah, I'm definitely at the point where people have got to go, come on, Grandma. Time for your pills,
what
Grandma.
Do you mean? I'm trying to think of a funny, like, what do you mean? Something, something, something.
To my immediate virtual right, his motto going into the fall season of 2025 is risen and jizzin. It's Rhett.
One of those is very accurate.
Like, I can't
we
think
won't
of
say which one.
Oh, it's jizzin. There ain't nobody on this podcast more big jizzin than Rhett. Like, just
big jizzin is pretty good.
Big jizzin.
Risen and jizzin was the.
There's no riz here. Let's just cut that out and just be honest.
Jizzin and jizzin.
Big jizzin.
Big jizzin.
Risen and jizzin was the banner I put up at the Easter church party.
Good God, that's real good.
Oh my God, I get it now. That's a bit.
Yeah, it's fucking good. Woo! We're not going to hell.
We're canceled.
You ready for a big podcast, Brett? We got a big one this time. I mean, you always had a big one, but we've got a big one this time around.
I was like, last week, I was like, we gotta talk about this game.
Yeah.
Can we do it in an early episode? It didn't come together, but then it's here now.
It's here now, whether you like it or not.
I think people will have guessed by the cover this time.
Yeah, I think the cover may be a little bit of
a giveaway.
Yeah, maybe a dead giveaway. To my immediate virtual left, his motto going into the fall season is humming and coming. It's John.
All right, little piggies, line up for your silk slop.
Yeah, it's here, boy.
We kept you fucking edged all last episode.
You imagine being edged for 3 weeks.
Now you're getting all the silk slop you can carry.
There's going to be so much silk slop. You're just going to be milked for silk. Just absolutely. And if anybody's curious, my motto going into the fall season of 2025 is hurting and squirting.
Can't believe you came up with three.
Wow. Jesus.
That was really good.
Maybe age has nothing to do with mental acuity at all, right?
Maybe
you just can still have it, being the age here that I am.
34.
So, yeah,
we got a big old show headed towards you right now, and I think we're gonna go ahead and first we're gonna pass the baton to John before. I mean, now that we've successfully alienated the entire fan base by doing literally what is it, five minutes,
16 cum jokes in a row.
He's literally done 5 minutes. Ghosty has turned this shit off. She's like, yeah, all right, even that's too much for me. Now that we've alienated the entire fan base with 5 straight minutes of cum,
guess what? We're not clear yet.
We're not clear yet.
Like a mercilessly hard platformer boss, I'm going to stand in your way of hearing Silk Song takes because I did not play Silk Song.
Yeah, John is the odd one out here.
I played cool games for interesting people. So you're gonna have to. You have to get through that gauntlet before you can reach the stuff you care about.
Yeah, you got a lot to get through here, people. All right, so we're going to start things off with John. What you got?
I think people have been debating a lot about what a good genre name replacement for Metroidvania is. I think Silk Slop's pretty good.
Silk Slop. I've been hearing Hollow Slop a lot lately.
That was Sylvie's joke, yeah. Silk Slop rolls off the tongue a little better.
Silk Slop just like has an extra kind of like, there's this tinge of grossness to it, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just like, oh, you can just kind of see it. It's like you were just like Shinji Ikari looking at your hand.
Silk is white like cum.
I'm fucked
just
up.
For the viewers. Yeah. So I had a moment. I had like about 3 days in, I was like, damn, everybody is playing Silk Song. Polly and Rand are playing Silk Song. I really did like Hollow Knight a lot. I had a good time with that one.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I want to play Silk Song.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I want to jump in and play Silk Song with everyone. Mm-hmm. And then I resisted courageously. I chewed through.
If only anybody else on the internet had your willpower.
Oh my god, I fucking chewed through my whole itch backlog that had backed up over like the whole year.
Mm-hmm.
I played like 7 or 8 Toxic Yuri Jam VNs.
Oh, good lord.
I played like multiple like novella length kinetic VNs that friends had backed up. I'm gonna shout out Valis 2 by Was Not Why Not. Also big fan of Kenny Day, CANIDA, but everyone killed it. Sunday killed it with Poor Image Superstars. Castell killed it with Uranium Gaze. Really liked Whole Numbers. I finally got to that after a year. It's also by Was Not Why Not. The Girl Who Was Hypnotized to Huff Armpits was quite good. Really liked. What?
Excuse me? Run that title by me one more time.
The Girl Who Was Hypnotized. It's Toxic Yuri Jam, Polly. Not fucking regular jam. I think my favorite Toxic Yuri Jam entry was probably Fru Hort by Sreika and Cayman. I did not no. Sreika and Co. had the juice for juice here.
I really
liked how it turned out. that a lot of folks brought a special flair to Toxic Yuri.
Folks really indulged in things that maybe you didn't know about them before, and then it's just like, look at you just going for it. You go, girl.
This is about a cute gay lady meeting a cute girl at a rave, and then things progressing from there. Mm-hmm. I'll make sure you can link that one in the description too.
All right.
If you're gonna jump into a Toxic Yuri jam, again, everyone killed it. That's probably my recommendation there. Really, gotta be honest, my real thing that pulled me through the last 3 weeks, I've been on another Kaizo Mario binge, and it's been wonderful.
It
y'all
kicked up again. I noticed it was kicking up again.
So last time I mentioned that I 100% at a Plumber for All Seasons. Mm-hmm. That is not a Kaizo hack, that is a standard hack. So if you want to play something like regular Super Mario World but not boring, you can play a Plumber for All Seasons. Really like that one.
That's how I described it to somebody recently, when they were looking for Mario games to play, and I was like, well, why don't you start with some ROM hacks? Here's a Plumber for All Seasons. It's Super Mario World, but not boring.
Yeah. You can play that instead of, yeah. I think probably I had more fun with this one than I would if I'd done Mario Wonder.
Yeah, I think so.
So that, it's just very, very pretty and charming. And fun the whole way through. I think the climax feels a little bit labored just because of the nature of the setting. Kind of is, it's so low key that there isn't really, doesn't really lend itself to having like a big climax. And the game even kind of jokes about it. Like it's like fighting Bowser for no reason.
Yeah.
but the last level's still cute. And I think just soaking in the vibes of that world was so worth it. I quite like the game a lot. And then I jumped into finally Akogare Mario World. I should have looked this up. What does Akogare mean? Akogare is a Japanese slice of life romance shoujo series. Mm-hmm. It means longing, yearning, aspiration, yearn for. That is appropriate. Yes.
You're a Mario hack.
You yearn for every H you cross.
Akogare, yes. This is the Kaizo hack for when you are yearning to up your Kaizo game and reach the next level.
Directed by Makoto Shinkai.
So this is an interesting thing, is that if you talking about Kaizo Mario World, you're actually talking about several different schools of design and storytelling and different artistic approaches. There's not, Kaizo Mario World doesn't mean just one thing. I mean, there's the original hack from like 2005, 2007, can't pull the name out of my hat. Sorry.
Had a chance to impress me and you didn't.
So that game is great. I that was the first hack I spent a lot of time with, actually. There's a lot of Kaizo blocks. There's a lot of trolls, like actual like jokes at your expense. There's a lot of waiting, like at the very first thing you do is wait for the missiles to come out of the five tall things, missiles.
I think I've played this one.
Yeah, it was big on YouTube for a while too.
Yeah.
And the very first thing you do is bounce on like five missiles for like 15, 20 seconds.
Yep.
And you just do that every single time. So if you're trying to play it legit, it gets boring fast because you get good at it. And then, so there's a big component of the difficulty is a lot of like, it involves more patience. It involves more remembering invisible trolls. And dealing with some random stuff. And the difficulty is more uneven. Like, you'll have parts that are, once you learn them, actually really easy. And then things that are actually frame-perfect tricks that are really, really hard. The modern school of Kaizo design, the one I've spent much more time with since playing Love Yourself last year, or the year before. God, it's been a long, long binge. Is the focus is on having like very tight 20 to 30 second checkpoints, where you keep moving and there's like long flowing motion where you keep Mario moving consistently. There aren't parts where you have to sit and wait for extended stretches. There aren't, they tend not to have Kaizo blocks. They tend not to have trolls. They tend to be, they involve lots of chocolate of hacks that like the instant restart hack.
That's the good shit. When you get a hack that's got the instant restart, that feels so good.
The instant restart and the music keeps playing consistently through death.
Yes.
So that helps. That just instantly like just makes it a more coherent aesthetic experience than something like Kaizo Mario World. But there's still, there's obviously still a charm to the retro style hacks. Like I still love the original Kaizo Mario World. I'm interested in the other games in that school, but that's generally like 2005-ish to 2015-ish. And then around 2017, some new schools emerged. You had the first Quickie World. You had Invictus. So that's another divide here, is that a game like Invictus has a lot of chocolate, which are custom assembly hacks that add new mechanics to the game. Like you can like and some of them will be, you can control the back, the scrolling of the water on the stage with the L and R buttons. That's not a vanilla Mario World mechanic, obviously.
That's real interesting shit there,
There's a really cool one, and I think Invictus, that's you hit a block and all the sprites on the screen besides Mario freeze. So you, it's a little clock block. You hit, you throw a shell as you're going up, hit the block with your head, and then the shell freezes and gives you time to land on it before time starts moving again, and then you, and then it starts moving. Yeah. So you will like release a shell in midair and then freeze it and then jump on it and then do something else. That freeze enemies in place.
That's crazy.
I've seen some crazy stuff where like an entire sprite level is like locked to Mario, so like you're solving puzzles by manipulating where the world actually is relative to another layer. It's also interesting that you said like there was kind of a renaissance in 2017 or so, because I'm like, that's after the original Mario Maker.
Yeah.
So I wonder if that actually brought in a lot of people.
That's a good question. It
is. Yes, absolutely. Like Super Mario, I know I've heard just from hearing other Kaizo players talk that absolutely Super Mario Maker brought so many more people in. And that's when like sort of the visual language that we have now in Kaizo games started to really develop more, where levels are really telegraphed well and you don't have to like guess at what you have to do. You kind of all like, if you can sight read a little ahead and see like
these it feels so good to get a good sight read.
Absolutely.
It's kind of funny.
Go ahead.
In 2015, people were like, oh, Mario, Nintendo's trying to monetize the Mario mod scene. And then in the end, it's like, because they kind of left Mario Maker alone, they ended up revitalizing it, the scene.
It worked out ultimately. I'm not going to I'm not gonna give credit to the devil, but I appreciate how it all worked out.
I think a lot of the troll stuff ended up staying on Mario Maker too, though. Like, there's that's a whole other world of like design philosophy.
How to
be an asshole in a funny way.
It's very funny. I still enjoy those clips you send me. So there's the hacks with lots of custom assembly, and then there are the Kaizo hacks. This is mostly what I have focused on, are mostly vanilla modern Kaizo hacks. So stuff like Quickie World and Quickie World 2. I played Ambivalence, I played Gamble. Those don't have a lot of custom mechanics. They're not like they're building levels around things that are built into Mario, and it's a strong focus on like flowing movement, less like really complicated item stuff, and just really pretty aesthetics like custom music and art and not and like color palettes and whatnot. Even then, a lot of them keep the art stuff pretty simple. So Akogare is for a long time, it was kind of like, this is the hack you play to like train up to play like Super Dram World or whatnot.
Yeah.
And kind of moved over. Quickie World 2 came out in 2019. And that was like very, that was very good for onboarding. But this is a 28 exit hack. It is big. That's why it's taken so long to get to it, is that it's it is a chonker of a Kaizo hack.
One of those 60 level jobbies.
Well, it's not like one of those, not like Jump Hat One Half or something.
Oh God, Jump One Half is insane.
It looks crazy.
God, it's just so scattershot and weird.
Yes. The Jump Team stuff is a world I want to... I've just been kind of drilled down on modern vanilla Kaizo hacks. Yeah. I kind of like focused on this very one scene, and Akugari felt like a climax for that.
Cool.
Because this is one of the first games in that style that feels like... It feels completely fully realized. It feels completely tight and modern. Like you could put this right up next to, in every respect, except that there's no custom music. It's all original Mario World music.
I think that's but it's one of my big like things is when I play a Mario hack, it's like, oh, but you're still just
oh god,
the plunky ass Mario World music that I
never liked it.
No, yeah, you get tired of it. I put on other music for big chunks of it.
Good.
So besides that, it feels fully realized. It feels like it stands alongside any of the modern hacks I've played. Mm-hmm. The level design and the flow of the movement feels... It's like, oh, this is what everybody is riffing on.
Right. Yeah.
this is how this really started in earnest. It feels so good. Mm-hmm. I was just very, very impressed. I expected to go for any percent, because again, 28 exits is a lot of exits. And this was the most time I've spent on any one Kaizo hack. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pull up my splits, because I've been keeping those.
You got splits.
You know I got splits. What am I looking at here? Yeah. Only two levels took me over an hour. And they were near the end of the game. They were both in the post game, the climax. But almost all the levels took me over 20 minutes or over 30 minutes. So I ended up taking about 12 and a half hours, and it has a death counter, so I know it took 3,600 deaths. but it's crazy to see like splits that are this smooth. Like it escalates through the first world, and then there's no like crazy spikes. And then it has like slightly harder levels in the finale. It's just very, very like tightly put together. It's kind of crazy to me.
Yeah.
Because that's like a couple hacks where it's like, oh, here's the one level that is much, much harder than all the other levels. Mm-hmm. And that's not really a problem, but it makes the story feel a little bit lopsided.
It throws the flow off.
Yeah, it's not... I'm still having fun because I like playing these games. But Akugari, there's a certain craft to making a hack like this. And Akugari is the earliest one I've played that feels this fully realized. I was very impressed. Mm. And there's a sequel, so that's exciting. Oh. I think that one has custom music because it was like 4 years later.
Right. Mm.
But I'm not playing Akugari 2 next. No. I've got my spread of hacks I want to play here, and I'm going to show those to y'all because I have been training for 2 years because I want to fucking play Invictus. Oh God, shut up.
Yeah, Invictus is absolutely... That's one you keep bringing up, mm-hmm. is Invictus, but yeah,
that's the one that I watched people play. That's the one I've been building towards.
Yep.
Played four Kaizo Intermediate hacks now. They changed the schema for SMW Central difficulty. I'm not pleased.
Nah, this would kind of piss me off if I got to the end of this journey and then the goalpost moved.
Uh-huh. So I just sent my lineup. I played like several standard non-Kaizo hacks, and then I played a bunch of Kaizo beginner hacks in a line, and then several Kaizo intermediate hacks in a line. Mm-hmm. I started with like Gamble and Ambivalence, and then worked my way up to Akugare. Those are like the lower half of... Kaizo Intermediate on Super Mario World Central.
Yeah.
And then Invictus Just Cook's Epic from 2017. Wait, 28? That was 2018? Oh, I thought Invictus was 2017. Oh, maybe. Damn. Okay. Never mind.
It's okay. Time doesn't exist anymore.
That just makes Akogari that much more impressive to me.
Everything is either before 2020 or after 2020.
Yeah. All these are before. But Invictus was the upper level of Kaizu Intermediate. And now they fucked it up. They changed the whole difficulty scheme on Super Mario World Central. Instead of Kaizu Beginner, Kaizu Intermediate, Kaizu Expert, it's Kaizu. And then Kaizu Expert covers like the original Kaizu. It covers, and then it covers like all the way up to crazy shit like Casio Mario World or TAS only nonsense.
Yeah.
But they changed it. Now it's Kaizu Skilled is the lowest level, because they don't want people to think that, you know, you can just jump right in without playing Super Mario World 1 or something, I guess.
Sure.
But and then Kaizu Advanced, and then Kaizu Expert, and then Kaizu Master, and then Kaizu Grandmaster.
Oh, jeez.
So now Invictus is not Kaizu Intermediate, it's Kaizu Expert. And all of the intermediate hacks I played are now Kaizu Advanced.
Yeah, they're just, yeah, everything got bumped down, so you're not as impressive anymore.
Mm-hmm. So now, instead of Invictus being the culmination of the difficulty levels on SMW Central that I've been playing, it is now an entirely new level. They were like, they wanted me to know that I'm not ready for this, that this is not... that I'm not prepared, and I'm going to get my shit handed to me.
Mm-hmm. Maybe it's the lower end of that level.
There you go.
And I'm not pleased.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, the thing is, like, the Kaizu Expert hacks I wanted to play, like the original Kaizu Mario World, because I got to a point where I could beat every level from a checkpoint with save states. I want to do it just on hardware with a 99 lives code, and then maybe see if I can do it without that, because halfway through Kaizu Mario World, there's a place where you can farm 99 lives. So really, and you can save after every level except the Switch Palaces. So really, the only difference between 99 lives and doing it completely legit on hardware as Miyamoto intended is to just beat the Switch Palace and then the fucking dolphin level in a row. God. If you can do in 10 lives, because if you play on two player mode, then you get 5 chances for Mario and 5 chances for Luigi. So all you have to do is beat those two levels in a row with one life.
In 10 lives.
And then you can, then it's basically smooth sailing.
Basically just easy baby game after that.
And that's what it takes. I feel like I can do it. I feel like I can beat Kaizu Mario World 1 on hardware. That would be so fucking, that would make me so fucking hot.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now Kaizu Mario World is also Kaizu Expert. So it does make that one feel like
a little more accessible.
As a post game super boss after Invictus, it feels more accessible.
Yeah. Yeah.
The two Maddie Thorson hacks that I've watched on YouTube are both Kaizu Master. They are a level above.
Oh yeah. That's it.
and then Grandmaster is exclusively stupid shit that I don't care about. But
stupid shit that only people
who's
like
making Grand those?
Bear play.
Yeah. I was going to say him.
Streamer torture games.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Torture chambers for streamers.
And to be fair, if I was making the kind of money that they were making streaming that, you could torture me for 7 hours too.
It's a lot more than 7 hours, Polly.
Yeah,
I watched Casio Mario World, and it was 13 hours for the stupid water level.
Oh my god!
And 10 hours for the Casio's final boss is the final boss from Momodora, Reverie Under the Moonlight.
Oh, that's dope!
It took Barb 10 hours.
That's
brutal.
That's insane.
it looks crazy. I'll send you a clip later.
Yeah, I want to see that.
So Invictus is firmly, here's what I want to get across to everyone listening. These games are eminently playable and approachable. If you've done, you know, Celeste B-sides or whatnot, this isn't that much crazy. This isn't really crazier than that. Mm-mm. Although there's a lot of Kaizu hacks that are easier than that.
Oh, for sure.
I linked Love Yourself. Polly played it. I got like 8 friends to play Love Yourself, and they had a great time.
Jumps and Platforms is amazing. Chicanery
Jumps
is
and Platforms
fun.
Is amazing. Chicanery, and again, like I really like the Quickie Worlds. Mm-hmm. you can so totally play these games and have a just a normal, like a normal fun time with them as platformers.
You're just playing Mario, like, but it's kind of Meat Boy-ish.
Yeah, you're playing Meat Boy Mario. So, like, it gets the there's this crazy upper level. I'm not aiming to get to that. Like, that's I'm just like, oh, streamer torture chamber, not interested. Yeah. The point isn't just to play the hardest possible games. It's that I wanted to play Invictus, and I knew if I played these games leading up to it, I would have the tools to do it. And so if I tell y'all, you know, in a couple socks casts or early next year, I fucking did it. Mm-hmm. It's going to feel really fucking good.
I'm putting my money on early next year.
That game is so, yeah, with the wedding. It's
yeah, you got a lot going on.
Got a lot going on. On the other hand, when you got a lot going on, feels real good to just drill down on a Kaizo hack.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good comfort food.
Mm-hmm. Zellas has been doing a Pokemon Nuzlocke and just playing, drilling on that for like multiple weeks because she keeps party wiped. And instead of giving on the second to last rival fight, and instead of giving up, she just took all of her like B team, C team characters and is grinding them back up. And then she just this morning beat the rival and is on there victory road. And I'm like, oh my God, is she going to do it? She lost so many mons.
Coming back from such a catastrophic defeat to snatch victory.
Oh, if she does it, I'm
so hot. You're going to be so hot.
Oh my God. Absolutely. Yeah. So we're both in our happy place right now. Mm-hmm. Immeasurably cooler than just playing Silk Song. Sorry.
I mean, who am I to argue?
And one thing is that I finished Akogare and I really wanted to start Invictus. And I was like, that's not a good call, John.
Not right now. You put that on the shelf. You put that on the shelf and you look at it and go, there's a day for you. There's a day for you.
So I finally, instead to, cause I wanted that Massacre fix. I downloaded Jumper by Maddie Thorson.
Wow. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I played the original Jumper 2 as a kid. It was a formative game for me. I never got past the third world. But I cleared Jumper 1 in a fucking sitting.
Look at you.
I was like, oh, shit. All the Kaizoing has carried over. I know how to think about rectangles and frame data. And I know how to, like really the essential skill of platformers is to that of like platformers that are very demanding is I jumped too high that time and I bumped the ceiling. Oh, I jumped too low that time and I bumped the spike. If you can just recognize whether you went too much in like left or too much right and then compensate, the only way to like get stuck to just get stuck is if you keep fucking up in the same way over and over again.
Yeah.
If you fuck up by going too far and then go fuck up by not going far enough, then you're circling where you need to be.
Yeah.
And if you keep alternating, then you'll drill down on where you need to be.
I think that like when I went on my Kaizo journey early this year, what I started to notice is that like I could feel the difference in frames that I held a jump button. It's something that your brain just starts to dial in the more that you play these games. And that's something that I learned to notice more. Like I could eyeball it and I could be, okay, I was a little low on that jump and I, you know, just fell on the spike. And then my brain just kind of knew how to rewire my fingers to go, okay, hold it for one more frame and you're going to glide right over that spike. And you start feeling the math. You start seeing the game in
rectangles.
Yeah. It's a real interesting thing that I've never really experienced with platformers before until I started playing with Kaizo, this world that seemed completely alien and inaccessible to me. But when you start dialing that in and the muscle memory and you know how to do like re-grabs and stuff like that, it just starts feeling like when it becomes second nature and you're not actively thinking about it anymore, but you're just solving the problem on the screen. That is one of the best feelings that I've had playing games this year, really.
Fuck yeah. Thanks for sharing that. It's I feel it too. Like guiding between two spikes and just being so conscious that it's like, oh, if I'd held just a little bit more this way, that would have been, that would have killed me.
Or just knowing, yep, just, I'm in there. I'm in there.
I'm in there. I'm fucking in there. And I feel like you become much more aware of like games as like platformers as like a software object. I think I think it's similar to like fighting game players when they're drilling down on hitboxes and frame data.
Shmup players.
Shmup players. I think it's pleasing. Speedrunners, of course.
Oh, absolutely.
I think it's very pleasing to, like, I think there's a thread of design thought that you don't want the player to be thinking about the game as, like, a video game.
Yeah.
And I think design like this is very much embracing that artificiality and embracing, like, you're going to be very conscious of the rules underlying the scene here.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's cool.
Yeah, that's a great feeling.
Mm-hmm. Jumper 2 is great at it too. I think I started Jumper 2 and vindication for past John because it's fucking hard.
I love that you're like, oh, I cleared the first one so easily. I'm a master now. Oh, face plant. Nope. 2 is still hard.
Aha, I'm a genius. Oh no.
Yeah.
I think Jumper 2 is going to be like 8 hours. Like it's actually huge. It's crazy. There's way more levels in the first game and it's way more technical because the first game you have static movement left and right. There's no acceleration horizontally. And in the second game you have horizontal acceleration and you have a side jump where if you quickly turn around like Mario and jump, you get an extra height.
Oh.
And you have a wall jump. They didn't have that in the first game, but they added in Jumper 2. Mm-hmm. So it goes from being very like clean and clear to being more something like Meat Boy, where this is a lot more technical now. Mm-hmm. It's fucking meaty and it's made me fucking salty several times. Because Kaizo Mario is 60 FPS and Jumper is not.
Oh, no.
Celeste is 60 FPS and Jumper is not. But it's also still a joy because all the things I love from playing Celeste last year very closely, doing all the B-sides and C-sides, like the underlying storytelling mechanisms are essentially the same in like all the way back in these old games by Maddie. And I just think that rips. I love playing a level and being like, this is the same level that was contextualized so utterly differently in Celeste, like 15 years later.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is the coolest thing to me.
To see that whole thing kind of like have a through line.
Uh-huh.
So I
looked something up. Ogmo, the character from Jumper, is from the game is from 2004. So he's in Super Meat Boy. I forgot about that. That's so long ago.
I know. Jumper, Ogmo is, and the guy from I Want to Be the Guy is in Meat Boy.
Yeah, I remember. I mean, that was for me the OG. Like everybody talking about this insanely hard game, the trolls. Mm.
No, yeah, Super Meat Boy. It is like Meat Boy is absolutely like we talked about it with I talked about it with Sylvie, but like we don't know very many games that are in the kind of modern massacre style that predate Jumper.
Yeah,
Red made one, which is cool. Mike Man 2,
yep,
fits. But yeah, that infinite retry single screen style that evolved into stuff like Super Meat Boy and eventually into stuff like Celeste and you know Path of Pain.
Ooh, ooh.
Like a lot of it really started with Jumper. That's so fucking cool to me. I love that
to be like to know somebody at the forefront of you know.
I want to make like a family tree and just put Mike Man at the top.
There you go. Like we know
from Mike Man all the way to Silk Song.
Mike Man downline to Ogmo, downline Meat Boy, and then Celeste and the Knight.
Yep.
So fucking funny. So I'm excited. I want to revisit more Macmillan stuff. I played Zumri Boy ages ago.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
There's still plenty of Maddie back catalog. Mm. I want to play Celeste Strawberry Jam. I think that my Kaizo Mario binge has extended into just being generally interested in high resistance mass score type platformers.
Yeah.
And that makes me happy because for a long time I didn't like these games.
Yeah, I know. Like I remember you not being very impressed by, you know, the games that people were talking about in that vein for a very long time. So when you did get into Kaizo, it was kind of weird because it's like, but you don't like that.
No. Like you would talk about They Bleed Pixels or whatnot.
Oh,
and
God,
well, I kind of had
They Bleed Pixels is a special kind of doesn't quite work.
Yeah. Had ideas. But I love the presentation, but
What if you took like a Kaizo Mario and then added melee combat to it?
That would.
Oh, God. Yeah, maybe. We'll see. The idea is like, I like stringing together performances. I like, you know, going for the one life clear in Castlevania or a Mega Man. Mm-hmm. Like, the individual jumps and moments are not as hard, but stringing everything together into one big performance is really, really satisfying. Yeah, you get that huge 1cc high.
That's my favorite feeling of like being able to put a level together. Like the first time that I went back through Love Yourself and was able to like string an entire level together without dying. It's like, is the coolest feeling.
Mm-hmm. So when you're playing a massacre game, it is, you're playing these 30-second checkpoints. And once you beat them, like, that's it. You move on. And finishing the game means beating each individual checkpoint once and then moving on.
Yeah.
And to me, I wasn't sure how you could turn that into a story that was compelling in the same way that like a classic platformer was. Mm-hmm. And I think Love Yourself was the one that really turned me around.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this can be a satisfying journey as a game. Mm-hmm. This can be as pleasing.
Yeah.
And that felt really good. It felt good to parse that out. I'm glad that I kind of enjoy both styles now. As always, I put Kaizo Mario World Hacks plus Celeste as my number one game of the year last year. Yeah.
I was thinking, what happens if it's the game of the year again?
Yeah.
Could that have Invictus game of the year?
Invictus, there you go.
It could feasibly happen. It could get there.
Just 2 years of Kaizo.
Flowed endlessly into the John.
I didn't even get there. Fuck yeah. But there's a million directions to go. Like I said, Celeste Strawberry Jam. Mm-hmm. Those games look gorgeous. There's tons more Mario hacks. Mm-hmm. And also just fan games, ROM hacks in general. I played a bunch. We talked about Pokemon Odyssey. The drama with itch.io, you know, a month and a half, 2 months ago, really shook me.
Sure, it's understandable.
And part of how I've been coping is, A, I cleared out my wish list. I downloaded some big games from people I don't know, and I played all of my friend games that I backed up on. And I've been playing a bunch of stuff from different scenes. So, like, playing these old Game Maker hacks, playing ROM hacks, playing fan games, playing Super Metroid ROM hacks. Like, there are many, many... I'm very happy. It seems like itch.io is kind of stabilized.
It's not gonna fucking... the boat seems to not be rocking and taking on as much water at the moment.
Yes. But also, it is nice to remember that there are 100,000 like
Mario scenes. ROM hacks.
Well, not just Mario ROM hacks, but there are like I have a spreadsheet I could show you that is somebody that played 3,000 Knit Stories levels and ranked them all and gave different like reviews for all of them. That's a whole scene that you could spend a year, 2 years, 10 years digging into, and that's just one thing. I Want to Be the Guy fan games is a whole scene.
ZZT, and
the entire interactive fiction community, ZZT, like you said, there are so many.
It's crazy
places. Yeah.
I just know about this huge community of like Mario Maker ROM, or not ROM, but troll developers, and like that's a whole scene. Yeah. Those hours can take you levels when you're just dying over and over. So like every there's just so much out there realistically.
There's so much art. If you like playing personal games by individual developers or very small teams, that aren't really colored by commercial interests, which is a thing that I really like. I like commercial games. I like a lot of commercial games. I still want to play Silk Song before too long.
A nice non-commercial game made by three people.
Sure.
Hey, the credit sequence is not 12 minutes long. So yeah, that game still has a small dev team.
Like the actual dev team really is three people and like the main musician.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then people have said, like, oh, but there's all these localizers and whatnot. And it's true. Yes, they had to contract in a bunch of extra people to do this stuff. They did
have to publish the game on consoles.
The main game was a tiny team. Yeah. It's okay to say that.
Yeah.
Oh my God, the discourse of actually no game is a solo game. Every game actually has 50 people working on it.
Look
at Silk Song.
These people want to jump through hoops to talk about shit like Expedition 33 or something. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's where all of that discourse comes from, where people are like, that's not really an indie game because literally 140 people worked on it. So they want to jump through the hoops. Well, actually...
Therefore, no solo developer developed games exist. If you want to bake an apple pie, first you must invent the universe. It's like, no, I played Jumper. It's a tiny one-sitting game maker platformer. These games don't exist to these people. It's crazy.
Well, one of the people saying no solo dev exists was the person who made Balatro.
Oh, yeah.
So, like... A solo dev was also like, oh, but when you get into like publishing on consoles and stuff,
sure,
like,
yeah, it's a lot.
It bloats immediately. Like I get, so I do appreciate that there was actually like someone who
with a
was
voice
more
of reason,
on,
yeah,
in the industry being like, it's complicated because I agree with like saying that was a game made by one person and then published by like 50 others.
Yeah,
I think it, like you said, it's complicated.
But
it's,
when they themselves are disagreeing with that, I'm like, well, okay.
But obviously, personal games by individual devs exist. They greatly outnumber the 100 dev games by a massive margin. It's just that to most people, they don't exist because they're knit stories levels on it that you download a weird website or Super Mario World ROM hacks. That's what I love, and... If the worst happens and itch vanishes from the world, I will still be able to play lots and lots and lots of cool personal games by individual devs. And I will have my like 600 games saved from itch that I really, really care about. So I appreciate that.
When it all burns down, we'll go back to Newgrounds.
Yeah.
There you go. There you still go. There.
Rhett's there. Just waiting.
I'm sticking on itch. I still love it to bits.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just stay mobile. Keep an eye out, and also maybe it's good to play games outside of like the one scene that you have been plugged in on.
Yeah. Variety is the spice of life, people.
It's sure
a vast cornucopia.
Mm-hmm. All right, Polly told me I could go long because the rest of it was going to be Silk Song, and I definitely took you up on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So is that all you want to...
I got it.
All right.
I got to wax philosophic about personal dev and freeware and platformers. I'm happy as a clam.
Couldn't be happier. So before we dive into the Silk Song stuff, I guess we could take a small detour before, I guess, half of the listening audience tunes out because everybody's tired of hearing about Silk Song at this point. But I did actually recently finish an anime for the first time since... God, yeah, Ave Mujica literally killed my desire to watch anime.
Oh man, has it been that long?
Yeah, Ave Mujica really just. I watched the Uma Musume anime, the movie, and Cinderella and stuff. But so that's not entirely true. But it is true that Ave Mujica absolutely did destroy my interest in anime for a good number of months. So I watched, and I know Rhett watched as well. Turkey, Time to Strike. A cute anime about girls bowling
and nothing else
until it isn't. So there is no way you can talk about this show.
Yeah, no way, because it's episode one.
It's literally episode one, and I am thankful to have had the experience of just watching it, because I thought, oh, cute girls bowling anime. That sounds like it would be fun and relaxing. That's something that I would, you know, want to chill out and watch. Yeah. I like these character designs.
It is funny. I remember posting about this before it came out, like, oh, they're doing bowling this time, cute girls and X.
Yeah.
Now it's bowling.
And that whole first episode is literally these girls at the bowling alley getting mad at their captain.
Yeah, they're getting angry at each other, and it's got this weird, like, vibe, like something really bad is about to happen.
The whole episode is just brilliantly ominous. Like, something, like, you think somebody's just going to die at some point. Like, there's a character, like, they leave the bowling alley, and it's raining and shit. You're like, oh, God, that girl's dead. This is going to be a sad girls bowling show, right? but it's about this captain who she can throw three strikes in a row, which is a turkey. And then this is typically how you want to, like, close out your last two frames of bowling, is you want to end on all strikes. So she throws turkey, gets to the third, and every time she goes for the final strike, 7-10 split down the middle every time. And everybody just keeps getting, like, especially one girl just continually just gets real mad. It's like, you don't want to win. Why don't you want to win? And that's sort of like the focal point of, like, where the series kind of starts developing its emotional roots. But some things happen. They have a fight, and a pink-haired girl, Mai, she runs down. She, like, the girl that got mad and stormed off runs out and goes to another bowling alley, and then she catches up to her, and it's like, all right, like, I won't leave the bowling club if you can actually fucking throw the fourth strike, and absolutely whiffs it. But when she goes to throw the ball, lightning strikes. Her ball starts glowing, and she starts being pulled toward the pins, and she can't let go of the ball. So everybody starts trying to grab her to, like, keep her from being pulled away, and big flash of white, and then they cut the credits.
Jesus.
It's a great first episode. You have literally no idea what's coming next unless you were spoiled by, like, the key art, which they changed the week after. Or you saw, like, an episode preview somewhere, but the girls end up being time skipped to the Sengoku era in the middle of this clan war. And it's absolutely bonkers. A big part of the anime is really focused on these girls kind of, like, you know, coming to terms with this very big situation that just happened to them. And over the course of the show, they all kind of, like, start learning about themselves, valuable lessons about, like, how the flaws in themselves, the things that, like, are holding each of them back. And obviously they're saving Mai for last, because, like, why can't you why can't you throw the fourth strike? You know, and there's obviously something there's something blocking her there. And it's they end up meeting this clan family kind of situation of other girls that are very suspiciously similar to them.
They're very color coded.
I don't know that if it's ever stated outright that there may be, like, some ancestry stuff going on there or not.
Don't think there is, because the ones in the past are all sisters.
Right. Okay. I couldn't remember.
I think it's just literally color coded for the audience's convenience.
Because, like, oh, this the purple haired girl is going to be connecting with the purple haired girl. The green haired girl is going to be connecting with the green haired girl from the Sengoku era. And there's just this really, like, it's not a deeply serious show. It's very fun. It's having a lot of fun with itself, and I think sometimes even at its own expense, because I think it knows how absurd it is.
I mean, those last few episodes, it's like, okay.
Yeah, they almost lost me for a little bit there.
There's one part, not the full climax, but it was like, okay, you have taken this too far into the absurd.
Yeah.
Because you're doing a show that is half serious bowling and half Sengoku era warfare.
Yeah, and, like, they literally have an episode where one girl learns that, like, look, this is the way of the land. I have to kill to survive. You know, like she has to
that's
watch.
That's one of the best parts. That's one of the launching best. Launching a rock across the lake and beating some guy in the head.
It's so good. And I think they do a really good job with all of the main girls and tying mm-hmm. their stories to their Sengoku era counterparts, and everybody kind of comes mm-hmm. together to learn from one another, and it's all in like. I don't know that I want to spoil too much of the end of it because there's a lot of cool yeah. stuff I think that they do. But I think this is a show full of really great characters, a lot of really
yeah.
nice moments that are really sweet, really touching amidst this entire, just the entire absurdity of this entire plot. So the fact that that they were able to pull off a show that mm-hmm. with such an absurd premise and still make you like feel something at the end. That to me, yeah. like I thought the ending was really good. There was one part of the ending where I kind of rolled my eyes, like
I know exactly what you mean. I thought that was unneeded.
You let that motherfucker off easy. Stop that. but everybody, aside from that one, unfortunately, has a really good resolution to their arc, and their like mm-hmm. where they end up feels really believable because of the time mm-hmm. the show spends developing them and maturing them, and it's just it's not a 10 out of 10 show by any means,
yeah,
but
it's not a 6 out of 10 no, like it has on the sites.
When the first episode of this show aired, this show had like a 7.2 or something. And then the second episode airs where the big reveal happens, and because it's not a show about cute girls bowling, mm. suddenly that shit bottomed out to like 5.5 in a week.
Yeah.
It was
crazy.
Rough.
Fucking crazy.
It was rough. I stuck with it, though, and I had a great time. I thought it was really fun, like just delightful. It gave me similar vibes to Train to the End of the World. Mm-hmm. I still like Train to the End of the World more because I think that show is just more tightly put together and it doesn't feel as contrived in a lot of the ways that I think Turkey can. But Turkey's really fun, and the characters, yeah. like I ended up really loving the characters. What were your thoughts on it, Rhett?
I do think because this is like a 12 episode show and there's the five main girls and the five counterparts, yeah. so that's 10 main characters, it's hard to, for them all to get a lot of screen time in. Mm-hmm. Especially, so a couple of them do feel a little shortchanged, especially because they're focusing a yeah. lot on Mai's, but towards the end.
Yeah.
But I think they do a decent enough job making you know and feel for everybody. Mm-hmm. I think the last episode I was like, this is a more exciting bowling match than an actual, like, real world. If they had just done a straight standard cute girls bowling anime, yeah. sports anime.
They build like, the tension.
This is the better version where it's like, I am edge of my seat here, tears yeah. in my eyes, yeah. like, hit this strike, Mai.
Mai, you have
the, so fucking the, cool.
The
so
build fucking up, good. The build up on that final throw they do for her, where
so
it's just
fucking stupid.
Slow motion, every fucking frame immaculately detailed. You literally see.
Oh,
her,
right. Yeah, the art style change in the final throw is crazy.
You literally see, like, her fingers bend intricately. It's so amazing. Like, this show, like, at points, it's just like, you're very fucking silly. And then, like, right at the goal line, it just earns it.
Yeah, the finale really didn't go the way I thought it was going
no,
to go.
I had no idea where they were going.
I thought the last like three episodes were going to be okay, we're going to actually stay in the modern period for now,
yeah,
and like resolve things there, and then it's like no we got a curveball.
We gotta go back, Kate. It's good stuff. It's good stuff. Yeah. This is like, yeah. if you're looking for something that's like a little off the beaten path, kind of silly, fun, and it'll make you feel something, you should watch Turkey. I think that this show deserves like a little more attention.
People are going to overlook this now because the score is so low on yeah. the two big sites.
It's really unfortunate.
I think this will be a hidden gem in the future, hopefully.
Yeah. Yeah. This is one I can see getting its legs later down the line, but yeah. It earns what it set out to do. It made me happy. I was smiling at the end. I had tears in my eyes when I needed to. Oh, it's so awesome. Good. So good.
It's just such an insane premise, but yeah. they totally land it.
Yeah, I like this way more than I would have enjoyed, like, a girls bowling anime. And the bowling yeah. is still a part of it. Like, they fight using their bowling balls. It's very fun and stupid.
I'll never, like, be like, this was... Okay, I don't know if I'll ever say a show was too stupid for me, but this fucking walked that line so beautifully.
It walks that line, and it does it with a confidence that you don't think it has. It's like, you don't have the balls to carry the... God damn it. Good show. Absolutely fantastic little show. All right, so... If you are not here and you're tired of hearing about it, or you're in the middle of your own little Silk Song playthrough and you don't want to hear about it, we're not going to go full spoiler cast or anything, but maybe we'll be talking a little bit more than maybe you want to hear right now. We're going to give you a chance right now to duck out, and we completely understand, and hey, we'll catch you on the next episode. And of course, we do want you to remember that we're the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you. All right, now that we've successfully ran off the rabble...
now for the ones we really love.
Now for the people who love us the most, because they're sticking around thick and thin. It's like that Jungle Book song that I can't think of right now. That's right on the tip of my tongue. It's time for us to dive.
Love Jungle Book.
Yeah, it's a good movie. It's a good movie. Mm-hmm. So it's time for us to dive deep and hard into Hollow Knight, Silk Song. And before we dive into this discussion, I will just say this off the top. Silk Song is a huge video game. Truthfully, it's probably too much video game. And we are probably going to be a little scattershort. I hope not. That would be terrible. No, that's funny, but I said scatter shart, and that is much more disgusting.
I tried to save you.
You tried. There was no pulling me back from the poop. It's not happening. I'm sinking deep into the well of sharts.
We've all been there.
We have. Everybody's had Taco Bell, right? We know what that's like. What is happening? But anyway, this discussion, we are going to try to keep things on a rail as much here as we can. We are going to not try to go overly long, but we're going to get scattershot at points, and this will by no means be an exhaustive examination of the game top to bottom. So please bear with us, and we will do our best to have a discussion about this game that is followable and coherent to the best of your Sox Pals abilities. So, Hollow Knight Silk Song, we know what it is. We know how long it took to get here. We don't care. That's all been documented over the years. It's the butt of every joke for the last 4 years. But it's finally here, and myself and Rhett have spent the last 3 weeks indulging. Ugh. Rhett has completed the game. You have done the true ending. I don't know.
You're close, but you're not there yet, which is crazy.
I am in Act 3.
But
this is also, I also finished the game once via normal ending, which does not include Act 3. And then rather than, you know, just doing the things I needed to do to get Act 3 in that first save file, because I had different thoughts than I have now about the game, I started the whole goddamn game over. So I have been playing Hollow Knight Silk Song now for about 60 hours.
You played this one hard.
This is maybe the hardest a game has ever been polyed. This was quite the investment. Again, like I said, this is a game where you feel there is almost too much video game to get inside me. I cannot fit that inside me. No matter which orifice you try, it's too much.
Now, I will say front end, I immediately thought that Rhett was the most valid Silk Song enjoyer, because like the 2 weeks before it came out, Rhett said something like, this is going to be a sprawling, unedited mess. It's going to be the most indulgent game ever. It's going to be fucking massive. Hollow Knight was already fucking massive.
Yep.
Even before they did all the DLC. And I am completely here for it. You said... You knew what you were getting into, and everyone else seemed blindsided. And I was like,
Yeah, Rhett seems to be the only one. Rhett seems to be the only one that was not blindsided by how this game just keeps going and going.
Hollow Knight 2, the Hollow Knight devs had all the money in the world to make a game for as long as they wanted, and it's kind of big.
Yeah.
I can't imagine.
It's really unsurprising to me.
Yeah. Like, Rhett's the only one that I talked to that didn't have some kind of, you know, hesitance going into this game. So big ups to Rhett. But for also being the OG Hollow Knight enjoyer. So
True. Yeah. I was there, like, literally
day
promoting
one.
The original Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Played the demo they put out on Humble Bundle before the game came out. Fantastic. And was like, I'm buying this immediately.
So you dive into Silksong. Let's just go ahead and dive in. We'll talk about some first impressions. You start the game up. And Silksong is a game that immediately looks and feels familiar. You know, Hornet begins the game doing all of, like, the Hollow Knight-y things you expect. The game immediately looks and sounds probably two times better than that original game. Just immediately, just even that opening area. There's so much art. This is a game that has...
There's so much art.
We have made the joke about video games having all of the art before. And I think Hollow Knight Silksong...
Too much art.
I think Hollow Knight Silksong may literally have all of the art ever. There's so much.
It's you've got a world that's bigger than the original, and like every room feels a little unique.
Yeah, there's it's not.
And again, that first game was really big.
Yeah. This one's like 30% bigger or something. Long.
And this one is.
Yeah,
it's huge.
It's
crazy.
It's crazy how unique every room feels like. And again, you get, like, even though the world is so big, it's very much like that Momodora Reverie in the Moonlight thing, where it's just like, I never used the map in that game because, like, oh, I know what this room is.
They're
just like,
that's awesome.
Every room just has unique stuff. I went through a large portion of this game without the compass equipped because it's just like, oh, like, I can feel my way around because these areas are so unique and interesting looking. So again,
Chad Pauley versus everyone else on my feed saying, the slot system is stupid. You have to have the compass equipped. So you just have to have the compass and the healing thing equipped. So you can't equip any of the fun stuff.
No, I'm not going to take the healing thing off, man. Taking the heal down to like 0.75 seconds is pretty good.
Okay. I use that one too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like in the first game, I literally never used the compass because I missed the map guy the first time. Oh! So I just ended up, because he wasn't as visible in the original release in 2017. So I just ended up drawing the first couple areas on paper.
That's cool.
So I never had to do that in this one, but I was like, as just like a point of like, symmetry, I'm like, I'm not using the damn compass.
Yeah.
Until I got to like very, very late in the game, it's like, you need to go to this specific wall, hit this, you know, dash up. It was like, okay, I need to know exactly where I am for some of these secrets. I'll use the compass sparingly.
Yeah,
there
are areas I hate navigating without the compass. So it's like, yep, that's going right back on. So Hornets kind of starts out doing all the things that Hornet does. Yeah, all the things that Hollow Knight did. You know, she could jump, slash, and do the things. And then,
this may be a long discussion if we're start going here. The first area is very reminiscent of Green Path, like I think deliberately, where it's a very nice mossy green area. You do notice right away though that she has the ledge grab, like,
yes,
like in Metroid Zero,
Metroid Dread. She can just she can just grab and vault herself up onto platforms.
Yeah, nice. So like there is one movement thing you notice is different like immediately. I'm like, oh, that feels good.
You also notice that she has a bit more weight to her. She has she's a little more slippery. She's got momentum. So whereas the original Knight is very familiar. Like, you pick that game up. It's very approachable, very familiar. He's floaty. He's light. There's not a lot of hard commit to his movement. Whereas Hornet is not exactly the entire opposite, but they've added enough to her that she feels very interesting and different immediately.
Yeah.
And then you start the next thing you will notice is that you no longer have an ordinary pogo move.
Yeah.
You got a 45-degree dive kick. And
it's very good.
It's very good, but it's also a big point of contention for a lot of people. A lot of people do not like that 45 degree. And there are ways to change that later, because you can change Hornet's fighting style through various crests that you can find that lets you build her differently, which ended up being a more involved system than I thought it would be. I think it's a really cool system.
Yeah.
But
Red, is it Copany, Copan Gunvolt, or like Rocket Knighty at all?
No, not that.
No. I was just kind of wondering.
No,
I was just so surprised by the backlash to the new Pogo, because I thought like consistently bouncing on the same enemy in the first game was so freaking hard.
Yeah, it really was. That timing, like, I don't know where people thought that like was just so easy.
Like, I think it's that.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the first game, you have the mushroom area early on, and then to kind of teach you the existence of the Pogo.
Yeah.
But they don't really ever require it again afterwards.
Nope.
So this game has the dreaded red flower area to teach you the new 45 degree Pogo.
And you may think
it's like the mushroom area where it's going to go away, and then the entire rest of the game is built around it.
There are like 32 variants or something.
Yeah.
Of the red flower, and they all function differently. She gets different height on them. They interact with her in different ways. There are moving ones that you've got a down kick onto. And I loved the dive kick immediately. Because I was already using that in the, like, just in the bell bottom area where you start out, I was already using it to wiggle my way into shit. It's like, you're not supposed to do this yet, but if you can bounce off of these enemies at this 45 degree angle, you can grab this cage and hop on over here and get into this other area, get you some supplies, find a different area to go to. And it's just like, oh yeah, this is immediately my shit. There was no point that I disliked the 45 degree angle on her on her down kick.
The hitbox just felt bigger to me than
it does.
In order to actually land hits and bounce up.
And you can hit bounceable objects very late with it. Like you can situate her almost to the point to where when you do the dive kick, you're literally just doing a normal pogo, because the hitbox is so big, it just vaults her up anyway. Because you don't get the full 45 degree angle, because your hitbox hits the flower and you go up. So you can just wait until you're like right over it. Your sprite is colliding, and then just do the down attack, and it'll look like a normal pogo, but she's doing the 45 degree kick, but it gets canceled.
I did have some issues later in the game where you're pogoing on spikes, where it's like it felt like the spike kickbox would have priority over the bounce.
Absolutely.
So I'd be hitting both on the same frame, but it'd be like, nope, spike wins.
Spike wins.
Get
spike
back wins. To the platform.
Do this whole little 6-7 second area again.
But the
thing you quickly come to realize is that this is a game that is built entirely around Hornet. So when you think of Hornet from that first game, who is this very fast, agile creature that is a huge contrast to the Knight, you see her zipping all around that world. You're now going to be in control of that, and I think that was so off-putting and weird to a lot of people that she immediately, like, it's not really like a higher skill ceiling, even though I mean I guess it is, but
it definitely is.
But
I mean, maybe they haven't pushed as hard as the DLC champion stuff in Hollow Knight got, but I feel like they're gonna soon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
First update is gonna be like boss rush. Also, all these bosses are 3 times faster now.
Oh, God. That is a thing. Yeah, this is a much faster game, whereas Hollow Knight is like slow and kind of contemplative. And wandering, you know, you're just kind of slowly meandering your way around these areas.
You get a run in this super early, upgrade.
Like the first upgrade you get is a dash, and they chain that into your jumps. Like, she has an entirely different jump arc when you jump from a dash. You're going to get an air dash as well very early on. In the very first, like, 3 or 4 hours of that game, they're already giving you a bunch of tools to show you this girl moves. And similarly, like, this is going to make a lot of the platforming very difficult. And this is something that persists throughout the game as well, whereas, like, Hollow Knight kind of tacked all of its extreme platforming into this one little area you have to go mm-hmm. into for the true ending. It persists throughout the entirety of Silksong. This game is full of platforming puzzles and challenges that you are going to have your limits pushed on. Like, they did not pull back in the slightest. Like, there is not a lot of grace given. It's like, no, like, this is what you're going to do. And I love that they introduced those red flowers so early. Because
so horny for it. I'm so here for it.
Because it's like, they're not, like I loved seeing the reactions to people playing the game. They're like, man, I can't wait to get out of this area and be rid of this dump. It's not a gimmick, baby. It's a mechanic. And they are drilling you that early because you are going to be engaging with it the entire runtime. There is not an area in the game that does not have a unique bounceable. And similarly, because she's like able to zoom and dart all over the place, the combat is much faster. It's much more dynamic. Like, this game feels a lot more like a very hardcore action game a lot of the time.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Because the enemies are programmed to be just very smart. They are very good at protecting themselves and each other. They feel aware. Whereas a lot of enemies in Hollow Knight just kind of like, you know, they schlep towards you. There are no fodder enemies in this game. There are no popcorn enemies. And that, to me, originally was kind of like, kind of feels a little... But, you know, on my second playthrough, it was like, no, I really like engaging with these enemies. It feels really good.
It's funny because, like, some of the very first enemies you fight in this, not in the tutorial area, but in the Marrow, like, you hit them and they jump at you in a weird way that will hit you if you don't back off.
Yep.
So it's like... Even, like, the mindless zombie enemies have a new trick to, like, catch you off guard.
And it'll catch you off guard the rest of the game. Because those little hoppy enemies, they just... I don't know whether it's just the angle, the timing, or whatever they're doing. But, like, I will often find myself just, like, completely getting tripped up by a little guy that's just, like, shambling toward me. And then just does this little hop and still catches me off guard. It's just brilliant.
It's such an early, hey, this is going to be a harder game.
Yeah. It's going to be different.
Yeah, yeah. And if that, and if that doesn't teach it to you, a lot of enemies start out doing two masks of damage.
There's one big enemy in the first area that I was not afraid of.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized it hit for two damage, and I became afraid of it and died.
Yep. Yep,
like it actually psyched me out.
Yep,
it's almost like it's an interesting texture to have some attacks that aren't that dangerous and some attacks that are very dangerous.
Exactly. And
that adds some texture to the world.
So you've got your fast dynamic combat. You've got enemies that are very smart, and they get persistently smarter and meaner.
Fuck yeah.
Like, you will reach enemies in this game that just sometimes they just feel like mini boss fights with how freaking tuned they are and how well they are at dealing with you. But again, it's not unfair because you are given so many tools as Hornet that if they did not tune this game this way, it would be kind of boring.
Yeah.
And then what plays into that is the healing system is another big aspect I think a lot of people are kind of not super happy about. But Hollow Knights would not work for this game. It just wouldn't. So you begin with 9 silk, and it costs a flat 9 silk to heal 3 masks. And the heal itself, it only takes about a second to fire off, and it's also versatile in that Hornet can do it while she's jumping. So you're able to give yourself much better positioning to heal. You don't have to just stand on the ground and like wait for the boss. Like Hollow Knight's healing meant that like bosses had to usually be programmed with some level of generosity to give you a chance to heal. You don't get that in this game. You have to create your healing opportunities.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. It's so funny because I dove in not knowing anything and then thinking, oh, the heal is for 3 now. That's amazing. And then stuff starts hitting for 2. You're like, oh.
So you've got like, and you also have silk attacks that you can use that use like 3 and 4 silk. So if you want to like Like, do you want to play defensively and hope that you have more silk for later to heal? Or do you want to just try to delete this thing as fast as possible, get it out of your way, and then go smack some other normal enemy for like 3 or 4 to get your silk back easily to get back into healing range? There's a lot of real back and forth with that silk system now that I'm playing it. Like, and I'm being very aggressive with using silk skills to just deal out extra damage. And it's just like, okay, I have to create my opportunities. And I think that that's really the big thing about combat in this game with normal enemies, is that you've got to create your opportunities because there's a lot. This game has a lot of arenas where they'll lock you in, and the enemy types that they put together all work together very well with one another. And it's there are some downright evil ones. The boss fights. Holy shit. This game got boss fights. This game
got a lot of boss fights.
It got a lot of boss fights, and most of them are really damn good.
By the by, I read a piece from Boghog, who's a great beat-em-up
this is a good
person, piece. And he wrote about the enemy behaviors and tuning in Silksong. Sounds so cool.
yeah. You really feel like I love that Hornet, like, not only just as a participant in the story, because she's not a silent protagonist, she very much has a personality, and it's fun watching her interact with people, but she also has her own play style that this game was just lovingly built around, and I feel like at every point they've stretched the boundaries of what they can do with her versus unique enemies and bosses that do just these wild things that it's just like, you have such intense... I had a moment playing this game, fighting a boss for the first time. One of the hardest bosses in the game, apparently.
I know.
And I first tried it. And it was one of the most... my heart rate had to have been like 200 plus by the end of it. I'd not had a boss fight like really hit me that way since the last boss of Metroid Dread. And I think that this game's bosses are just like I think at worst you'll find bosses in this game that are little, it's all right. Like, I had a good time. Like, it wasn't terrible. It didn't, you know, I didn't have to break too much of a sweat. And I haven't fought a boss that I would straight up call absolute. Well, no, I take that back. There's one boss I would call absolutely terrible. Fuck you, Girl the Great. That boss sucks. I had to find a way to cheese that one. But every boss that I have fought so far up to where I am at in Act 3, like me and Rhett were just talking before the show, and I'm at a boss right now that's just blowing my mind with how creative it is and how you fully, absolutely have to use everything in her skill set in order to survive because you have no choice. Like, you are literally... It's so amazing.
It was something I thought they were building towards the whole time, and then they did it with without a safety net that I thought they would provide.
Yeah, there's no safety net at all. You've just got to do that shit, and I'm so looking forward to getting back to that because I just failed right before we started recording. The boss fights are incredible. What about you, Rhett? Like, any big highlights here for you?
That one boss that you one-shotted.
Yeah.
Like, one thing I really liked about that fight, ironically, is that they threatened to heal.
Yes!
And I don't know if they actually heal because there's no life bars, but that caught me, and it made me play so much more aggressively than I normally do.
The second I saw her charging up for a bind, I was like, oh, shit, I am not getting out of your face, bitch. We're doing this.
Yeah.
And then you just rush her down, dodging through all of these insane diagonal horizontal attacks and, like, parrying her. And shit. It's like, this man, that fight is so good. Yeah. It's probably the best fight in the game.
It's probably the best one, because a lot of the bosses, I do feel like I get into a very, like, patient souls mode of, like, dodge the attack, then wait for the punish. Dodge the attack, then wait for the punish. Mm-hmm. That one, I was rushing in. I was not letting the heal go off. I was, you know, doing the uppercut with the Reaper Crest.
The Reaper Crest.
Like, just like running up, like no, using that to get in the air and then back away and then wait for the next attack. And like, it was so fun and fluid. And so like, that one took me a few tries. The first time I went in there, dead in like 5 seconds. Because I saw those attacks came out. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Holy shit. There's some really great boss fights. And there's definitely some clunkers or some. I felt like once you've really got a handle on the moveset, it's hard to be caught off guard because late game Hornet just has so many.
She's got
mobility options.
Yeah.
And there's an extra crest for an extra back dash in there.
Oh, my.
Like the scuttle one. Mm-hmm. I never actually even used it, but I was like, oh, so there's just a different dash away from enemy tactic if you want it. So like three air dashes, the hover, the downstrike to pogo and get some more air. Like it's super aerial mobility game.
Yeah.
It's like, crazy.
She is very good. Like if you want to play aggressive, like they're like even just a default Hunter's Crest, like one of my favorite tactics is doing a dash attack that pops you up into the air and then you can combo that into a dive kick, hit them again, land beside them and crack off two or three more hits. And it's just so blindingly fast and it works on so many bosses. And it's one of those things where you feel like you're playing a character action game at times.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the meat and potatoes of the game, of like where, like what it feels like. The game is, again, entirely designed around this character and her moveset, and in the same way that like Toho Luna Knights was, where that game was entirely built around Sakuya's time manipulation and everything she could do. This game is in turn is built like you couldn't play this game any other way. You know, like you couldn't take Hornet and put her in Hollow Knight. It wouldn't work.
I kind of want to see them try
just to kind of like, because those areas are just,
she's so much faster. Yeah. She's actually got a bigger sprite.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like
I saw a clip of Hollow Knight the other day and she just like the cutscene with Hornet, just, she uses the L2 attack. And I'm just like, they just took every animation and was like, okay, how do we make this work in the sequel?
Yep. You get to do everything you see her do in that first game. Like that claw, like the claw line is one of my favorite platforming things. Just, it just feels so good. And you don't even need a wall for it to work. The fact that
when you
can just like hook, you can just hook dead fucking air and she'll reel herself to it immediately.
Kind of silly.
It's silly, but from a platforming standpoint and building platforming challenges around something that's illogical, but it feels cool. That feels like a moment where that probably mostly only worked on walls and then it didn't. Mm-hmm. And they were like, no, wait, this feels too cool to not use it like this.
Yeah, there's a lot of things like that where they don't tell you every use it has.
Yeah.
So at first you think that's only going to be used on walls or the floating rings.
Mm-hmm. And then you start playing with it on your own.
Or you just miss one and you go, oh,
it does that? You can just do that?
And then later, like, oh, you can just hook enemies and you get invincibility frames. Yep. You just bounce off them.
Yep. And if you have a crest that lets you do the pogo bounce, you can go for days on that motherfucker. You can just hook him, dive kick, get up above him, and then just boing, 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 boing.
Like, when I first got the dash, I thought it was just like the air roll. And then I used it on the ground and she starts running. I'm like,
wait a minute. That changes some things.
When you run and jump, the jump changes and you can actually get a little more distance that way. I'm like,
And again, they build platforming around utilizing all of these tools, whether it's like claw lining, wall jumping, or like having to like do some air dashes or doing like the run jump. Like they build like all of these challenges around it. And like, I think that makes like when you key it in, it makes exploring that world feel really cool, because then you're just zooming through rooms, you're just blindsiding enemies like later jackasses.
You really zoom in this game. I think maybe the zoom is a little detrimental at times because it does feel like you don't have to fight enemies a lot of the time.
It does. Yeah.
And then I do want to mention the economy. Because it's a little fucking busted.
Man, it is rough going.
It's busted by being really, really tight, right? Normally these games, money just stops mattering.
Yeah, like in Hollow Knight, you're halfway through Hollow Knight, you don't have to care about Geo anymore.
Yeah. I wish this game had a point where you could stop worrying about money.
I found myself this time of like really liking it. Like I would get to some moment like, you know, there was a moment where like I had done a big thing and I had messed up my character pretty bad and I had to do a thing to undo the thing where I messed her up really bad. And then I got to the other side of where I needed to go and they're like, yeah, we'll fix you, but you also need this money. I was like, oh God. Oh God. I wasn't watching my money. And I didn't it. I didn't have it immediately on my counter, but thankfully this game has you can keep yourself from dropping all of your money by spending 20% of it at certain vendors to bank 80% of it. So if you like, if you have 100 rosary beads, you can pay 80 and those 80 will be banked on your character. So you won't lose them if you fail to, if you fail the run back. And like, thankfully I had a few necklaces hanging around and I was able to buy the thing. Cause I had a real heart stopping moment there. But yeah, the economy is real borked in this case.
It's tight the entire time to where in act one, I was like, I get what they're going for here. It's a cold, harsh, oppressive world. Mm-hmm. It's very Souls-like. I'm okay with like having to skip a bench because I can't afford it.
Yeah,
like,
it's real scary. It really sucks to walk by a bench and not be able to use it, though.
Oh, that's so funny.
Like, it really sets a texture here. I think this, this is getting a little off, but I felt like there was a very heavy, early industrialization period vibe to this game where like workers' rights comes up a few times in like the dialogue. Like one of the towns is like just this kind of shanty town, like there's no technology there whatsoever. And then you go to another area that is industrialized, but underneath it is like this horrible factory.
Oh, God,
and it's just terrible. Like workers' rights, what?
Yeah.
No, just go die in that spike trap, idiot.
I also want to give a big nod to the writing in this game. I really like the dialogue writing in this game. They really put on.
Is so good.
God, she's such a good character. I like the. They're like you. She is not the kind of character I think that you think she's going to be.
She's kind of not the same character she was in Hollow Knight. She's very cold and distant in that one because she's just so defeated, I guess, by what has happened to that kingdom. She's more optimistic in this one for sure, like trying to be the savior and like extremely well written and like very kind of flowery language without being overdone.
The dialogue is very flowery, but the way that it is done is not annoying. There's a way you can do the kind of writing this game is doing that is annoying as shit, but they aren't even
close. They're entirely speaking in poems, but they don't get quite that far.
Anyway, sorry to have interrupted there, but you brought up the dialogue there, and I kind of wanted to mention, like, Hornet is an amazing character. I love just everything she has to say. I'm always glued.
There's one room, speaking on, like, the vibes again.
Yeah.
There's one room with three paid benches next to each other, and, like, it's called, like, the workers' break room.
Yeah.
And the fucking benches are paid
The benches are paid. You have to pay to use the benches.
And then when you stand up, it fucking folds up and goes away. Like, they're so obviously saying, like, making a capitalist point here.
Yeah, like, this game's story is really dark on those and, like, the religious themes.
And then in that same room behind a fake wall is, like, the confessional box.
Yes!
So, and it costs 25 rosaries, so the first time I ignored it, and then in the late game, I finally go back and actually pay it, and it's like, confess your sins, Hornet, ... plays this canned message, you have confessed your sins, to repent, work for another cycle with no pay.
God.
It's so oppressive. But there is levity in the world, again, just because there are so many colorful characters. I don't think there's nothing as colorful as, like, Quirrell and Zote. There's nothing fun like the Dung Defender. It doesn't go that silly, but there are a lot of really fun characters. And, like, I love the moments where, like, characters will, like, there's this thief NPC, and, like, he's like, hey, I bet you got some nice things on you that I could have a hand. And he, like, creeps toward her and creeps toward her, and she just smacks the shit out of him. She has this wonderful little smack animation that they use a few times. It's really good.
The original game had like dreams as like the main theme, and that's not present here, but it's more like hope against oppression, I guess.
Yeah, that's absolutely what they're
it's going definitely
for.
A much heavier game. But speaking where I started of the economy, I think by Act Three, though, it was like money gets harder to get in the late game, which I really didn't expect. And then I basically stopped having to be able to use the tool system because
you didn't have any metal.
Because I'm fucking out of metal. It's like, okay, guys, it's a little too tight here where it's like I'm in the last area of the game and I kill an enemy and it drops like 5.
Yeah.
So I'm like, oh, so I just can't restock before the final boss again. Yeah. Cool.
Like every tool is like you get a limited number of each tool that you get. They're kind of like just sub weapons, mm-hmm. basically. And there's apparently like 30 of them.
There's so many.
They're all almost so good. You want to use them, but every time you use them out in the field, you'll run out. And when she sits down at a bench, she'll use the metal to create more. And then that comes from your stock.
Yeah. Is that they made a crafting system that was so invisible that I didn't realize it was the
crafting
system.
Crafting? Even though one of the major components is called craft metal.
Well, that one I get, but like the shards being automatically refilling your ammo, that's the crafting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's some points, like late game areas, when you break down a wall and there's a hidden area behind it and it's just like a metal shard thing.
And
it gives you like 20. It's like, fucking give me at least 100, for God's sake. this isn't shit.
Some of these tools cost like 10 metal to use per. Yeah.
And you don't even drop them on death. No. So I'm just out all the time.
Wow.
Yeah. So the late game did get a little frustrating at that point, where it's like the economy never lets up. If anything, it gets worse. Then you have these insanely upgrading the needle in the first game was pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
The quests in this game are much more involved, especially the last two.
Oh my God.
And then you go to the NPC to upgrade it and they're like, oh yeah, give me 500 rosaries. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
That was like the last of my rosaries. I got nothing left. I got no necklaces. Yeah. I spent the last of my rosaries making that dude do my final nail upgrade.
I'm like, dude, I did the quest, and now you're just jerking me around here with this, with the cost being even higher.
I saved your ass in the middle of a forest, and you're still going to charge me 640 for this upgrade?
Unbelievable.
Oh, but yeah. I think all the systems here are they work. Mm. They're fun to engage with. The crest system, again, that lets you change your attack style. Like, it changes everything, too. Your dash attack, your downward attack, like, your normal... Mm. Like, everything changes. So, like, there's a lot of room for customization here with Hornets.
I'm sure people are going to do amazing things with some of them, like the Beast Crest.
Oh, for sure.
Your healing and you fucks up your downstrike.
Yeah.
But as soon as I got that one, I was like, get out.
Because like you get the crest and then they automatically equip it to you, so you have to use it.
You have to go through red flowers and spikes. And I'm like,
with beast.
But my downstrike is like an up curve now. What the fuck is going
on? How do
on?
I do this?
I actually did die there. It sent me back. I'm not going
to
be kidding.
And it just makes you, doesn't send you to the bench. It takes you back to where you got the crest.
Yeah.
Do it again. Okay. So I guess the last thing we can touch on here is the structure of the game, because this game is structured a bit differently from Hollow Knight. Whereas like that
there's
game
axe.
Yeah, there's axe this time. And it's not like, I guess there's not really like hard stops or anything where it's just like, oh, you do a thing, end of act two. It's just like, well, it just comes from natural progression.
But those walls are really obvious in hindsight.
For sure. Go ahead.
But I think the funniest thing is when the game opens with act one, Farloom, and then you can play like 20-25 hours without hitting act two, and you start to get a little worried.
Yeah.
What? You may forget that it said that at the start.
Yeah, like, and act one is It's pretty straightforward. It feels very much like it's there to mostly introduce you to the world. It introduces the quest system, where you perform various tasks for people. You get like two hubs, I think, in Act One.
A lot of the game.
Yeah,
and you get a lot of those early movement upgrades because there's not that many in the later two acts.
No, there's not. No. And so Act One is kind of just like you do the searchy platformer thing a lot, and it feels very comfy in that it still feels like it's moving at a clip that is very similar to Hollow Knight. I think the areas are much smaller in this game.
Bye for the best,
but they're smaller, but there's just a whole hell of a lot more of them. So you kind of start feeling like you have a lot of options early on because like you hit the Marrow and then Farfield and then Deep Docks. And it's just like you're hitting these areas in quick succession, but you're going to have to like play around in them a bit and go back and forth a little bit. I think Act One has a really I think Act One's got a pretty good pace to it, despite the fact that you could wander around for 25 hours and not see that Act Two sign.
Act One is kind of like it's two layers. Like the game is very much about moving up. So the first thing is to kind of you've got like five areas on the bottom layer.
Yeah,
and there's two paths up, so you got to figure out how you're going to get up there. And then layer two is like, okay, now there's like five things we want you to hit.
Yep.
So it's very, very Metroidvania in that, like, Metroid has the statues.
Yeah.
And, you know, here's the four things you got to get, and you can kind of get them in any order. And then this one is like, hey, ring these five bells, because Dark Souls,
yeah. Yeah. This game's got a thing where you'll get to the end of an act, and it's like, go do three things. Go do four things. Go do five things.
Yeah, they do it a number of times.
They do it every act. Every act has that moment where you're going to go, and you're going to go hunt down things on these big maps. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So Act One, pretty fine, pretty neat, pretty tidy. And you get to Act Two. Go ahead.
There's actually two different end bosses to Act One, depending on which way you go.
You can get into
Act
Two.
Both of them are great.
Yes, they're pretty good.
Both of them are great, but I think Last Judge is one of my favorite bosses in the game because that was the one that made me sweat the most.
Last Judge is very funny, too. It's got a thing. Makes me laugh real hard anytime I see it.
Didn't get me, but it felt the most like an Elden Ring boss where first half is just like, here's the basic version of every attack.
Yeah.
And then phase two is, here's the every same attack, but with like a ton of AoE added.
What if everything was also on fire?
Yeah, what if we just set everything on fire and he's got like screen filling attacks?
Yeah.
And there was one dash that I my muscle memory learned it wrong, so my reaction was just to freeze up and fucking eat the hit.
Just eat the punch.
Yeah, so I just kept losing because I don't have much HP. I've only got like 6 HP at this point, and everything is still doing 2.
Yeah, every boss basically does 2 hit points.
The first fucking boss, the Bell Beast.
The Bell Beast is every boss is 2 damage.
Delicious. And you've only got 5 HP there, and you heal for 3. So it's like you get hit twice, and you're on 1, and then you heal for 3, but now you've got 4.
Yeah.
You can't get hit twice. The math with the 2 damage hits is real bad in Act 1.
Yeah, you feel it until you get a few masks under your belt, unfortunately.
Yeah. I kind of felt that way about the silk as well, where it's like, I'm not going to use the silk attack because I need to be full to heal. Once I had like a little bit of that buffer area, then it's like, okay, now I can be a little more flexible because I don't have to be 100% full.
Yeah. Like I think I've got 16 silk now. So I throw shit out with reckless abandon.
Yeah. Once I got a certain one of the R1 attacks, I was like, oh, this is better than heal, because what if I could just parry them?
What if you could just parry everything?
It's so funny. I was like, finally, a modern video game without a parry. And then I realized, actually, but every attack, like most attacks, like if they're a sword based, you can just parry them.
You can parry contact damage.
That's crazy.
It's nuts.
I saw some discourse early on because folks were trying to parry every attack
and then having a lot of trouble with the bosses, and then people pointing out you can just like move around and dodge them.
Yeah, you could.
And
just
it's like,
do
oh
that.
No, people's brains have been fried. They forgot how to play Mega Man.
They forgot how to just again
move out of the way of the attack.
Jump over character dash. You are given an air dash literally as your second major power up. Like within 20 within 20 minutes of getting the normal dash.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So are we good for Act One?
Yeah. So Act One very fun.
Yeah.
I really. But then, yeah, getting the actual parry and riposte, I was like, oh my god, this one rules.
That one, yeah, I used that one for a large chunk of the game. But I kind of always just end up going back to the silk needle. I just like that for some reason. I just got real good at working it into my rotation.
Cool. Early on, I just kept hitting R1 by accident, and then I couldn't heal. So I was like, get off my button.
I no longer want this in my crest.
And they did a really nice thing where when you get that first ability, you use it to break down one wall.
Yes.
And then you never need it again.
Yeah.
So I didn't get punished for taking it off. Okay, Act 2.
Okay. So once you meet like the first major goal of the game, you hit Act 2. And then this is where the game kind of just explodes wide open.
Yeah.
Area 2 is probably two or more times the size of Act 1 in terms of areas that you can more freely explore and like power-ups that you can find. You mm-hmm. can do them in any order. There's just overall way, 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 way more to do. I spent 10 hours in Act 2 on my first playthrough without touching even one of the major objectives in that.
Oops.
I didn't do anything to progress the story. I was just going mm-hmm. back to other areas with all of these new tools that I was getting. It's like, yes, if you give me a double jump, I'm going back and fucking cramming her stupid ass into every corner I can.
It's so funny that, like, you spent 10 hours not doing the main story and exploring, but also, like, not getting towards the Act 3 stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So it's just like,
you crazy.
It's insane. And you could... Like, and this, I'm pretty sure that you can get to this area and easily just do the three main objectives.
That's the thing. Once you're in the Citadel, I don't think you actually have to leave.
Yeah, you don't.
I think you can relatively be direct and kind of just mainline it.
Just go to the High Halls, the Future Bride. Yeah, you could just do all that shit and then go to endgame.
Yeah, so it's weird. Act 2 kind of feels like two things to me because there is the main story quest, which is relatively... I mean... Those two areas are fucking massive. It's so funny. Act 1 has like 11, 12 areas on the map, and then you get to Act 2, and it's just two big ones.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, is that the entire rest of the game? It's like, no, but kind of.
Yeah, kind of, but then you see that they kind of like all spiral off into each other in the new areas, mm-hmm. and then the new main areas that you have to go to. Mm-hmm. There's so much.
It kind of felt like reaching Dracula's castle, though, where I feel like they had a very more. We're going to have Act 1 be Metroid and Act 2 will be Castlevania.
Yeah.
Because it's just one huge building.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like there's a clock tower kind of thing in there.
Yeah. Like it's very much very deliberately. This is the Castlevania part of the game.
Yeah.
Like it's even a bit like it's got the same kind of gothic imagery. That it literally, if that's not Symphony of the Night, I don't know what are you telling me it is.
I know her basic movements even mimic Alucard.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like she has that same like when you like
turn Alucard, around
the turn. She has it's almost frame for frame.
That's so fucking funny.
I saw somebody post the sprites together, and it's almost frame for frame the way she does her turnaround from a dash.
That's great.
Love you. You gotta love it when they're wearing their heart on their sleeve. They're wearing those inspirations, and it's just like they're not ashamed. They've got the confidence to be able to do that and say, "Yeah, but our game's still really fucking good too. Don't worry." Act 2 is kind of like where the whole game blows wide open, and it becomes it becomes like the big Hollow Knight experience where you've got access to like 28 areas. Go find shit to do. You're going to find something. You're going to trip over a rock and find something.
It can be overwhelming, though, because, like I said, like, or you can just do the things that they put on your map.
Yeah.
They and, put like, the thing, when, they I, put when the I just told you to do that, map. You finished the game in like 3 hours later.
Yeah, I did. I did. And again, by the end of it, you got to understand, my first playthrough was hobbled a bit. I literally woke up the morning this game came out having carpal tunnel syndromes in my left hand.
Fucking tragic.
Like, my left thumb, like, I couldn't really do up inputs very well. And 80% of the bosses in Act 1 are flyers.
80% of the enemies are flyers. Yeah,
good for me. That worked out real well for me. So my first time playing this game, I was a little underwhelmed because I just I was playing it through a real bad situation as well. Mm-hmm. And so having the wrist stuff going on top of all that, it's just like, man, I'm just kind of frustrated. So I like when Rhett was just like, you can just go do the three things on the map. Yeah.
Because you're bitching about this key that's on the other side of the map that you in like two areas deep that you don't even know about yet.
It's not even required.
And it's not part of the main story.
I didn't,
it's to unlock an optional boss.
When I found that fucking key, I literally was just like, I don't need this thing. I don't need it at all. I was just like, when I found it in my second playthrough, my reaction was just total exasperation. It's like,
It's on the other side of the map entirely.
It's on in the worst area of the game. Some would say. I am a Biowater defender.
Oh, I've seen some DMs. You got real mad at that. But
look, Grohl is a piece of shit. Grohl can suck my ass. But
what about the Grohl run back?
Boy, that's real bad. Oh my god, the run back to Grohl is torturous. And there is no way to make it easier. You just gotta do that shit. Okay. I don't 100% ardently defend Biowater. But as an area that is big, awful, terrible to get through. Yeah, okay, it's real fun that they put this here and that it's making people so mad. So again, Act 2, sprawling, big, meat of the game, basically.
Was that one of the swamp levels, by the way?
Yeah, it is.
It's called Biowater.
Yeah,
yeah, of course.
Do you think it's a nice spa?
It's not a vacation point, John.
Ironically, the music is very soothing.
Oh, God, the music is one of the best tracks in the game, though.
Going to Misery Mire and Zelda.
There you go.
Maybe it's nice.
This could be a prime vacation spot. But the music in this game is incredible. There's so many great tracks that just immediately come to mind that it's just like, yep, love that soundtrack to pieces. But yeah, Act 2, meat and potatoes of the game. You finish Act 2 and you do roll credits. So if you finish Act 2 and you roll credits, you can say you beat Hollow Knight Silk Song. But Red, that's not where true Silk Song players quit, is it?
Mm-mm. I mean, it's very similar to the first game in that, you beat the Hollow Knight, you beat the game. Yeah. And then there's a bunch of side stuff you can do. But this one, the side stuff becomes sprawling.
The side stuff becomes required.
Yeah, this is where I started to think this game isn't perfect, because I thought Hollow Knight was basically perfect.
Yeah.
The amount of stuff required, because they basically didn't want people saying that there was an Act 3, I feel like.
Yeah, I kind of feel like
they wanted it to be this big secret.
Yeah.
Because it takes like a dozen hours of side quests and
you have 100%ing the map. It's like East 8, where you have to do all the side quests on the board to get the true ending. You have to do all of the message board quests that appear in all of the hubs in order. That's just one thing that you have to do.
And also, some of them are just give us money.
Yeah, some of them are just here, give me 500 rosaries.
Give me 400 craft medals.
Yeah, like that's it. All right, I'm throwing my money in and you get no reward for it.
You get nothing back and it's just a resource drain on a game that's already extremely tight on the resource drain.
So Act 3, Rhett, tell us a bit more. So we've got to do everything. Like, again,
you basically have to do everything.
You know how they're like the little grubby boys in the first game? Like they.
Yeah.
You've got to collect at least 22 of 30 to get as another checkpoint, as another check mark to open Act 3.
Yeah.
And then you've got to do this big quest that requires you to find 4 specific items in the world.
I mean, to be fair, that one's really easy besides one of them.
Yeah, the one of them is fucked.
One of them I thought was like the trigger for Act 3, and then I found out, oh no, it's like 10 other things that I happen to already have done. Because I like did the entire map except for Biowater. Yeah. I was just looking at it like, I just wonder where I could go to make progress at this point.
Gosh.
Giant empty spot in the map.
Gosh,
it could be anywhere. All dead ends everywhere except for this one like 20% unfinished area.
Yeah, you know where you gotta go, and it's like, oh god damn it. I got lucky on my bile water adventures though, because I actually went to putrefied ducks first and I found an item that lets me not get poisoned. It'll happen, but like you get like 10 or 15 dunks in the poop water, and then it'll finally break.
I was wondering how that works. So it's not just one and break. I thought it was
going to be. No, it seems timer based. Like, I think it's just like how long you spend in there. Like, I checked it out, and like I was able to like jump up and down in the water 10 to 15 times. And then there was one time where they kind of force you to run through an area of it to find a secret. And so like it broke halfway through.
Mm. I know there's some hidden walls in the fucking swamp, and I'm just like, guys, this is so fucking mean. Like a weaver nest that's infected with maggots.
Oh, it's so good. We love it. I love it when my silk gets maggot locked.
What was the maggot level in the first game?
Deep nest.
Yeah.
There's nothing quite as creepy in this one. This one, I feel like this one's a little more torturous gameplay wise.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because it locks your healing.
Yeah. You can't use silk skills at all if you get maggoted. And the only way to get it back is just like you have to like build up to 9 silk and then use a heal. But you don't heal. You just break the maggots off.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're poisoned. And it depletes over time.
So you still got to stay on top. Yeah. It's torturous, but fucking it's mean.
Dark Souls curse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. Curse. Oh, the worst. The worst. So, Act 3, continuing
So, this is when we're in a real spoiler territory here.
Yeah, I don't think we mentioned specific things. We kind of just touch on, like, Polly, what you gotta do.
Even Polly,
I'm not done
even Polly
yet.
Hasn't finished this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I think you can kind of see the end in sight here, I think.
Yeah.
Because you're working on that quest, that Act's version of do the three things.
Yeah. I think that this is like the last three thing that I have to do, and then I can go just do the true end.
Yeah. So I do think Act 3 is like, are you somebody like me who played all of Elden Ring and then also played all of the Elden Ring DLC and was still not bored? It's excessive, I think.
Are you a Hollow Knight sicko?
It really is. The game is like, hey, we took 6 years, 7 years making this game. We're going to put a lot in here. This is for people who weren't satisfied with the normal ending, the true Hollow silk sickos.
Yep.
But it does start to feel a little excessive, like having the whole map get refreshed.
Oh, yeah.
In a game that's already extremely big.
Yeah. Like, how did you guys
get
do this?
Get that inverted castle section?
It's not, but that's the thing is, on one hand, I'm like, this was excessive. And on the other hand, I'm like, it didn't change enough.
Yeah.
It's not an inverted castle.
No. It's not that drastic.
I used inverted castle as like derogatory. And then you said, oh, no, it's not as drastic a change as the inverted castle.
And then John breathed a sigh of relief.
Oh, no, God. I was saying to Polly last night, like, I would have done more for Act 3. I would have delayed the game a year.
Yeah, I think that like what they do, like how that third act starts out and what happens and the consequences of what you do, like it definitely reads more of like maybe something on the level of World of Ruin kind of, you know, Final Fantasy VI kind of thing.
But it's not.
No, it's not. There are things that happen, but it's not quite enough. There are cool things that they do with all the enemies that are very cool. Mm-hmm. Once that happens, that's awesome. There's like that. I pogged so hard when I started seeing it happening to normal enemies. Like, oh, let's go.
It's very cool. I'm like, I'm not dissing on it too much. I think One thing we haven't mentioned is that the game, the world is very dynamic a lot of the times. We're like, NPC quests. NPCs will just be in areas that you don't expect sometimes, and they'll help you in fights.
Mm-hmm. Oh, those are always so hype.
I enjoyed hearing about somebody having an NPC shopkeeper they liked, and then just like randomly going back there for something else and revisiting them, and then they're dead.
They're dead!
Beautiful. What was I going to say? Like, a lot of the quests, like, because they kind of pop up through the game, they'll be quests like, oh, there's an enemy back in the startings area. Go kill him. Yeah. Like, that kind of keeps the world fresh. So, like, Act 3 does do a lot to kind of, like, refresh a lot of events and, like, have new stuff happen. Yeah. So that's good, but I would have gone further. Mm. I would have made Yeah.
Go ahead.
I would have made you revisit every fast travel station again.
Oh, my God. Because they have the balls to do it once.
Yeah,
and then
that's the thing.
And then they don't go full. And I thought they were going full bore with it. Like, I thought that whole method of fast travel was just done. Like, oh, shit. It's well, over.
Apparently, there was a bug in the at launch where it could be done.
Yeah, Braylif got that. Where he got locked out of...
If you didn't go to that specific one... The event would fuck up, and then you just wouldn't have fast travel anymore.
Yeah.
Oops.
Had to rewind that save. Thankfully, there's a very generous save rewind if you fuck up.
I had no idea about that.
Yeah, you can, like, the game creates, like, these hard checkpoints storyline-wise. So you can, so it's a little circle icon on your, the circle arrow icon at the bottom of your file. You can reload. Oh. Yeah, like, it creates little checkpoints.
I saw someone mention that, but I thought it was the swirl icon, so I clicked it and nothing happened. Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Because I saw somebody say, you can go back to Act 2 if you click this. And I'm like, what? Why would they let you do that? And now I'm like, oh, okay.
It sounds like maybe this is like, this game is so big, something might break and you might need to do this.
We had a whole 8 testers.
Yeah. Hollow Knight 1 had what, 20?
20?
Yeah.
They kept this shit so locked down that they only wanted 8 testers because they didn't want anybody to know it existed.
I admire that. Like, see, part of me just loves that.
It's probably like all friends and family.
I loved when games were a big mystery. I loved getting this game day one and not knowing a thing. Like, it just, I felt like a kid again, like getting it, going to the store and buying a game for the first time and not knowing what I was getting, you know? I loved that.
I didn't even watch the trailer.
Nope, I didn't either. I didn't want to know shit.
Killer.
So,
me neither. I really wanted to go in like completely blind. I was like really passionate about it.
Yeah. Good thing, like, you didn't do a thing. Good thing you didn't do a podcast with people that were talking about it for an hour, right?
this game's so fucking big. Is the 80% ending good?
John, have you played Dark Souls?
Yeah, I mean, we're talking. What are we talking about? Good here? Like, I don't know. Like, I am in Act 3, and I don't even know what good could possibly mean.
It's not the same. The 80% ending is not the same level as the Hollow Knight true ending.
No,
not even close. All right.
I mean,
this is one where you got to go full sicko. Look, if you want.
Get in. Like this is a game that I played. Like, I just kind of found a rhythm with it where I was okay playing this game in like 30 to 60 minute spurts and just kind of being okay. Like, I didn't need to do like 9-hour marathons like
the Chad fucking Breakmaker.
Like sickos,
I did
like
my first day,
like Toad did for fucking 5 days. Like, I don't know how people do that, but I had a really good time. Just like, I'm gonna fire it up. I made like, what's my goal? All right, well, I got some quests here I can do. Let's just go play around with that. And they're like, all right, I'm good now. Or I was like, all right, I need to go to that next major area in the Citadel. So let's go ahead and do that tonight. That'll be my project. And earlier, it was just like, all right, I got to do all the flea mini games because I don't know what it is. I like them. They're fun. I hope the reward's good. And then it ended up being amazing.
Look at this break taker over here.
Yeah,
love taking a break. Love taking breaks from games. Rather, oh yeah, that was hard. That was annoying. I bet I took a break and that made it okay.
I don't enjoy video games.
Spend your free time taking a break from your hobby.
God.
If Polly had died on that boss where her heart rate got up to 200, you absolutely don't just immediately rush in and do it again.
No, you take a break.
That is definitely a break. It is an exhausting fight.
Yeah.
It's visually stimulating. You are moving on that control faster than you've ever moved in your life.
God.
I got so fucking nervous on the final boss in this one like the true final boss that Polly hasn't done yet, that when I lost, you know, fifth try, but like towards the end of that fight, I was just like, okay, I'm done for the night. Cause my hands are fucking sweaty and shaking. I stopped for an hour and then I went back and did actually beat it.
I'll play maybe 60 to 90 minutes of Kaizo at a time. And then it's like, okay, pull away.
Break takers.
Yeah. There's just bosses in this. If you get frazzled, like
we're all a bunch of fucking break takers.
We are. We're not real video game players. Yeah. If you get frazzled at a boss at this game, one, there's probably something else you can just go and do for a bit. So I think that, you know, especially when in Act 2.
Yeah. For me, when it was the final boss, I'm just like, well, okay. And I'm not going back to farm either.
And I think, like, John, being on the platforming kick that you're on, like, I think that you absolutely love the
sicko. I'm so horny for the bosses and the platforming. I mean, I love that shit in Hollow Knight.
Yeah, it's just crazier this time around. Like, that stuff is fun in Hollow Knight. It is an entirely different level here.
Good. The most fun I had in Hollow Knight was when I'd like beat a boss and then I'd immediately jump into like the dream version of the fight and it would be way too hard and I'd grind on it for like 45 minutes. Always a good time.
Yep.
I'm honestly
and then the other most fun I had was the final boss gauntlet because it was the coolest shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm honestly kind of surprised they just didn't come up with an equivalent for the dream stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's DLC. It'll be here.
I feel like they're definitely saving harder versions of everything for, especially the early game bosses. The early game bosses are weird because I really like them, but a lot of them also rely on spawning minions.
Yeah. Yeah. I think those are always kind of like the worst bosses where they've got to spawn minions to kind of make it harder. Mm-hmm. I think that always feels like a last resort to me of like, how do we make this harder? Well, what if it just spawned babies that were equally annoying? All right. So, in the interest of, again, not becoming a spoiler cast and winding things down, any final thoughts, final impressions? Rats, what's your final just opinion of the game?
I don't know. Honestly, it's weird because I'm looking towards Game of the Year already. I'm just like, I don't know where this wins. I'm not guaranteed that this wins.
Is it better than 100 Line Journey?
Oh.
Probably. I mean, that one was...
Between the two... super indulgent, ridiculous, two big games.
The thing is, John, is I play mostly big games. This definitely wasn't like the second biggest compared to like a Trails game.
Right. No, was 7 Rebirth this year?
And that,
that too. Yeah.
Like, there's multiple 100 hours games on there. This was like 60 hours.
It's okay, right? You are the most valid big game player.
John playing 60... or 120-30 minute games, me playing 100-hour games.
I will dunk on two big games all day, and I'll make fun of gamers and Zeitgeist games and whatnot, but always know, in the back of my heart, Rhett, you are valid.
You're valid.
No one else is. No one else playing Hades 2 is valid.
There you go.
For some reason, I don't know how this happened, I typed in, like, F, or... into the Steam search, and they have a new search, and the two games that came up were Silent Hill F and Hades 2, which doesn't have a fucking F in it.
Go ahead. Hey, more like, I was like, hey, D's two nuts.
Boom.
I stole that from M. Reed. All right, keep going, Rhett.
Oh, I think when you load the Steam search, it just Hades just comes up without actually typing anything, which is kind of funny. Right. But I was like, oh, it's only $30. That's half the cost of Silent Hill F.
Yeah.
And I was okay with that first Hades game. I'm not going to buy
it. You haven't played Silent Hill 2, Red?
Yeah. Silent Hill 2, the new one, is also $70.
Yeah. No, I'm saying, well, why would you wouldn't? Don't not play that one. Play Silent Hill 2.
Didn't Polly have a really bad Silent Hill 2 revisit?
I don't give a shit. I played that up. I played it up just because it was funny and I knew it would probably ruffle some feathers.
It ruffled mine. Everyone in the chat was immediately like, I never liked Silent Hill at all. And I was watching history get rewritten before my eyes. Rick, you don't have to play the newest Silent Hill. You can play the old ones are very good.
I don't really like horror games though, is the thing.
Well, then why would you play Silent Hill?
Because like Ryukishi wrote it.
Okay, there is that. And it's like Silent Hill 2, the new one, I feel like has a lot more Resident Evil in it.
Yeah.
Where you can actually fight back.
Yeah.
God. Never mind, you're not valid anymore.
Oh, lost your valid status. I guess my final thoughts on Silk Song is, even though I've not finished it, I think I can safely say that I think it's a fantastic game. It's a game that feels like it was loved and labored on for 6 years in every way, and maybe, you know, in a bad way where it's just kind of too big. It's not a safe sequel. I admire it for not playing it safe at all. They took a risk, and I think they took some lumps for it. But I think that the passage of time is obviously, and the near universal acclaim I think that the game is seeing right now, is that stuff's going to go away pretty fast. Nobody's going to remember Red Flowers in, you know, a year. But
I don't know. I don't know. The difficulty discussion became obnoxious.
It did.
To a point where it was so predictable.
Yeah.
And also because the game actually was a lot harder than I expected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wonder, I feel like Red Flowers might go down in history as being this filter that prevented like half the audience from... Because the game had like 500,000 people playing on launch day or something.
Yeah, they like literally brought down every platform you could buy it on.
Oh, right. 500,000... On Steam.
So fucking funny.
But I think that they had a vision for what this game would be, and it feels entirely uncompromised. And like my only complaint is literally there's just a little too much of it.
Yeah.
If that's my only complaint for this game that I waited 6 years for, like, man, y'all did it. Like, hats off to Team Cherry. Like, I don't think they let anybody down here.
Cool. That's so dope.
I do feel like I kind of disagree with Polly saying that this was a not safe sequel, for I feel like this was a very safe sequel in a weird way.
Really?
Where it's kind of exactly what I expected with how big it is, Hornet being a more mobile character. Like, I feel like her speed kind of detracts from the exploration aspect, like the slow pacing that Hollow Knight had. But I feel like in a lot of ways this was the game I expected, where it would be more action focused based on the character.
Just the character itself, yeah.
Yeah.
I was reading responses, and it seemed to me like this was a weird game for something that Polygon would write about.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
What are you going to say, Rhett?
But it also, like, I will say this may be one of the best feeling to play games I've ever played, where just the combat is so good when it locks in. Mm-hmm. Like, I want an arena or boss rush DLC for this, which I didn't want in Hollow Knight, and they did it. So
the DLC is coming.
So story wise, I felt a lot of Souls DNA in this one.
Oh yeah, it's there. It's way more prevalent than it was in Hollow Knight. Like, it's
crazy because it was very prevalent.
Because it was very prevalent.
The Hollow Knight normal end was just Dark Souls.
Yeah, it was just Dark Souls. Yeah.
Yeah, but again, like, for Hollow Knight, everyone just equates saying it's like Dark Souls to difficulty, and that's not what I'm doing.
That's typically what they mean. Yeah,
like, for me, it was like the story of the kingdom that fell to madness was similar in Hollow Knight. And so in this one, there's three games that I thought it was similar to. One of them is Dark Souls 2.
Yeah,
in that it's a sequel. It's a very iterative sequel. Like, you kind of know what it's going to be going in, and maybe not all of it lands, but then there's a lot of humanoid enemies, like knights, and I think the enemies in this game get kind of repetitive at some point, where it's like a lot of the areas will have like,
here's your flyer, here's your knight,
here's your maybe your pesky guy that throws stuff at you. There's maybe a few too many areas just in general, but that have like the same kind of main trio of enemies. There's a lot of bosses that are very mobile knights towards the end of the game. And a lot of them are optional, so it's like not a huge thing to rag on. But it was like, at some point, like, okay, I've kind of locked into this type of fight.
Yeah.
I'm so mobile with the double jump and the wall climb and the two air dashes and the hover, where it's like, I know how to get above a boss and then just kind of cheese it from there. Yeah. I could heal in the air, like... So there's a couple fights that are maybe a little too similar.
You still get that feeling of like a Metroidvania kind of game at the end, where it's just like, all right, I am a badass and I'm going to beat up some motherfuckers. And I think that having that moment in those kind of games is fine, because I think that, like, when you earn your way to, I mean, I think this game earns its way to it. Whereas I think a lot of games in this genre are just way too piss easy anyway.
Oh yeah, I love art, probably Act One the most, because every boss in that game felt a little scary to me.
Yeah.
Like, those are probably the ones that took the most retries, the most, like, runbacks.
Yep.
I was loving it. I think, so going back to the Souls comparison, it also reminded me of Elden Ring in that it's a little too long.
Yeah.
And a lot of the later bosses, I was, like, first or second trying. Because I felt like in Elden Ring, like, the base game, not the DLC. The DLC is fucking ridiculous, but the base game was just, like, you're throwing so much content at me now, and I'm still just chewing through it maybe a little too fast, where nothing is fully sticking, because a boss you fight like 10 times versus a boss you fight once, you know, it's not going to leave as strong as an impression.
Sure.
Because it's both those games were just a little exhaustingly long.
Yeah.
Back to Dark Souls 2, though, they also do a story thing towards the end that's very similar to the giant memories. I thought that was just kind of funny to actually have. Oh, here's a way in which I can say it's like Dark Souls 2 that isn't dismissive, because they kind of do one of the coolest things from that game.
Yeah, from that game. Yeah.
And then there's just Bloodborne in general with the aggressiveness of the early enemies. The
combat, yeah.
Because in that game, like, you have to... There's a mechanic in that game where you hit enemies back to get health,
and it's very tied to the silk system.
Very similar to fighting an enemy back to get the health to get silk. So there's just Souls DNA all over this thing.
Oh yeah.
There's that random event that Polly missed the first playthrough. That is just straight from lifted from one of those games.
Yep.
They just said, oh, FromSoft did this, we're going to do it too. This
game wears its inspirations on its sleeve. And
great artists steal.
Yeah. They're not being cute about it at all.
But they're doing it with such, like, honesty, I guess.
Yeah,
like,
I think there's just an honesty to it.
They say, hey, we want to do our own take on this idea and make an extremely cool sequence out of it. Yeah. And then make it so, like, 90% of people might miss it for some reason.
Yeah. All right. So, is that Silk Song?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, if you stayed to the end, thank you so much for enduring. John, thank you for enduring. I know that we kind of just kind of bulldozed you in this segment, and you have my apologies for that.
Y'all are the people I want to hear about Silk Song from. Mm-hmm. There's so many people I'm not interested in hearing about Silk Song from.
Yeah.
Well, because neither of us would. It's too hard it's for too 20 hard. Minutes.
Wah. There are two masks of damage. I need a Nexus mod to make it one. And I'm also going to. I'm adding another Nexus mod.
There's people who might be listening.
I'm adding another Nexus mod. And it lets me respawn outside boss rooms. Because runbacks aren't fair. And don't respect the player's time.
It's artificial difficulty. I think it's definitely real.
Elden Ring lets me blah, blah, blah. Every game should be Elden Ring from now on. Anyway, we're done with Silk Song. I need to get out of here because I got a dinner that I need to get to. So
You know what's funny is I'm hoping that Invictus takes me less than 40 hours because it's 22 exits. And
you use that leftover time to play Silk Song.
I'm hoping it takes me less than 40 hours. If I get there, that's a victory. I've heard from some people that took 80 hours. Some streamers start talking about GDQ. The first time I played it, it took them 80 hours. It took them 15 hours just to beat the final boss. So I'm hoping that I've trained enough that I'm going to be ready. But there is a possibility that when I do to Invictus, it will be a Silk Song scope journey.
All right. So that is going to do it for our show this time around. If you stuck around, we hope you had a good time. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. And please don't take any of my barbing about the difficulty or you needing to play the game any way you want too seriously. I'm just playing.
Mods, it's fine. You can do whatever you want.
Enjoy video games the way you want. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Just don't write extended blog posts about why arcade games are evil.
Yeah, just don't do that.
That's so funny.
That's insufferable.
Seeing people like, I saw somebody being like, well, did you know Sierra games were made with one impossible puzzle so people would call the hint line? It's like, okay, but how is that relevant now?
Yeah.
Ever since game FAQs, like,
Yeah, like there's no excuse here.
The internet exists now.
Yeah. Yeah. John, can you tell the folks at home where they can find you?
FarawayTimes.com.
And
I don't even know at this point.
Don't even
analyst.
Know.
I actually finished like 5 shows this week.
Oh my God.
We're going to talk about Vending Machine Season 2 right now. It's bad.
Finally.
There you go.
Well, there you go.
No.
It's bad. It's bad.
No.
All right, folks. We're going to get out of here until the next one. But until then, I want you to always keep it tucked in the back part of your mind so that you know we are the podcast that loves you. We're the only ones that love you.